We're just a little bit short of a quorum, so we are going to start the committee. When the quorum is present, we'll interrupt and do some other things. We just need one more. Isn't there a Republican someplace that'll come in the door? We have just one more member needed. I have some other things to do first, Nora, so some other technical things first that I want to discuss. Who's here? Okay, why don't we start, and then we will officially call the meeting to order when we get one more person in the door. The first thing on the agenda that I want to talk about is we're going to be making an amendment. But we do have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order. And we have a couple of things on the agenda to begin with. Representative Pillsbury, did you read the minutes?
Yes, I did.
Representative Pillsbury would like to move the minutes of April 16th, 2009. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. And then the first thing on the agenda is the small revisions to the Ways and Means Committee budget resolution. This resolution is 07-1. Mr. Mark, maybe you can give us a clip on that. There's some other of the changes that need to be made. So the amendment is actually the A3 amendment. I would move that amendment. And Mr. Mark.
Mr. Chair, members, the A3 amendment, and just note one correction on line 1.2, it was amended April 15th rather than April 14th, if you want to make that change on line 1.2. The changes in the amendment, lines 1.4 excuse me, and 1.5, move $10 million of the fiscal stabilization funds, the federal fiscal stabilization funds. Line 1.5 reduces the tax committee target for that by $10 million. Line 1.4 increases the Healthcare and Human Services Committee target for the fiscal stabilization funds by $10 million. So those two lines move $10 million of fiscal stabilization money from taxes to Healthcare and Human Services. Then the new language, or the beginning of line 1.6 is new language. Line 5.
Just a second. Okay, Mr. Mark.
Lines 1.7 through 1.11 add targets or limits for the healthcare access funds, and it sets three limits, spending on line 1.9 of $4,314,000 for the higher ed and workforce development bill. That's an appropriation to the University of Minnesota that's been in that bill, or has been in that bill for a long time. It's a base level appropriation. Line 1.10, $1,023,462 for the Healthcare and Human Services Finance Bill. And then line 1.11 is $3,866,000 for the State Government Finance Bill. There are actually two appropriations from the Healthcare Access Fund that are also been ongoing for a while in the State Government Finance Bill. Part of it's to the Department of Revenue for collection of Healthcare Access Fund money, and then a small amount to the legislature. Then lines 1.2 through 1.6 set TANF targets for two bills, $534,374,000 for the Healthcare and Human Services Bill and $23,466,000 for the Housing and Public Health Bill. And these are the spending amounts that would the limits would allow them for those bills.
Discussion. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Marks, if you know, what will the balance be in the health care access fund after these expenditure limits are allocated to these different spending committees, if you know?
Mr. Marks. Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I've had a discussion on that earlier today. I don't remember the numbers precisely. I'll get them to you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Marks, is it like under 100,000, or are we kind of cleaning out the bank here, or?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, for the healthcare access fund, I believe it's several million dollars, but it's not very many million. For the TANF fund, I believe TANF is brought down close to zero by June 30th, 2013.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on the A3, Mr. Marks, in there, that also, did you have some additional sheets that you want to just at least talk about?
Mr. Chair, members, there is a spreadsheet that says Target's Federal Stabilization Fund, and it lists the limits as adopted on March 27th and amended April, that should say date 15th also. And then it shows the proposed changes that are being proposed in the amendment today. And you can see the targets for each committee there. The additional sheet that was in the folders, which has a lot of numbers on, and says Target's General Fund House revised for restructured finance bills. This is the revising or redoing the targets as the bills become combined and or separated and combined. The left half of that page are the targets as set by the budget resolution, and the column that says House Limits Fiscal 2010-11 are the general fund numbers that would be in the budget resolution for the various committee areas. For those bills that are separated into other bills, you can see the components, and just as an example, if you go down in the middle, cultural and outdoor resources, the target number was $142,536,000. You can see there that bill was broken into four parts, and you can see how much each component area had. And essentially, the way this is determined is by looking at which parts are going in which direction and adding up the numbers for those parts. The four components will total of $142 million. If you look then on the right side of the page, the components go to the bills that they are now in. And as I said, cultural and outdoor resources is goes to four different bills, and so you can see how the targets get rebuilt. If you look just across there under economic development now has a target of $272,174,000. It's made up of three components that came from other bills, and those again are the spending numbers carried across from the components on the other side of the page. So it's simply a breaking down of each bill by account and then building it back by the revised accounts that we get the revised limits on the far left-hand column.
The last two pieces of paper were for your information, so we can sure ask any questions on them if you wish. Any questions? If not, then the chair would remove the A3 amendments to establish some revised budget resolutions. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carry. We're getting close to cookies, right? Okay. The next bill on then is the Slavic House File 2088. Representative Faust, would you be so kind as to move?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2088.
Do you recommend the pass? Based on the general register. Representative Slavic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
First question I need to ask you, and members, you should have that in your file as well. It should be clipped together. 2088 should be a spreadsheet. It's in your file. Is there anybody that does not have that information? I think the spreadsheet is available to the public as well.
Okay.
Most of that information is just outside the door. If you're having difficulties with finding that, I think there's an adequate copy. The first question, you were given a target, Representative Slavik, and are you within your target?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we are.
And just on the spreadsheet, would you point that out to us?
I'm hoping I have the same spreadsheet that you do, 417 at 11:50 a.m.
I have 4:52 p.m.
It would be on line 88 on the second page. You go over to the House recommendations for school year 10 and 11. It's the 455-016 number. The 426919 is federal funds, or general funds, and the 28097 is the federal funds. For
okay.
A total of 455.
Very good. Okay, yeah, let me make one announcement. If there's anybody in here for the economic development bill that's listed on the agenda, that will not be heard tonight. We're waiting for the Senate file to come over. We want it to be a Senate file. So the economic development portion of the bill will be scheduled for Wednesday. So if anybody's here just for that bill, that will not be considered tonight. Thank you. Okay, Representative Slavik, do you want to give us some highlights of your bill?
Yes.
And then we'll handle the amendment afterwards.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. First of all, thanks for letting me go first. My daughter has a concert tonight, which I will now make, so I really appreciate that. House File 2088 is the Omnibus Early Childhood Finance and Policy Bill. I want to thank the early childhood members of the committee for putting together a good bill. My fiscal analyst, Emily Adrians, is here for any questions. For the Ways and Means Committee, you have two of our members on here. You have Representative Mariani that's on the Early Childhood Committee and Representative Hamilton does, and they've both done great work, so appreciate their participation. Our budget encompasses two departments. In education, we have the first three articles, Early Childhood and Family Support, Community Ed and Prevention is Article 2. Article 3 is Self-Sufficiency and Lifelong Learning. Article 4 is with the Department of Human Services, and it's all the child care accounts, including MFIP child care, basic sliding fee, and child care development grants. We have three goals this year: closing the achievement gap, getting more kids ready for kindergarten, and increasing quality of all of the early education system. One thing we did have in our bill numbers, as you will see from the spreadsheet, is we have the shifts are in there for the 8327 shifts. We also had $26 million in stimulus money. $3.4 million of that is going to quality, and $22.6 million of that is going to help with the basically sliding fee child care. As far as the governor's recommendations, we took almost all of his policy recommendations for MDE. The only thing that was removed was the 12-hour requirement for school readiness. That was removed in committee. And for DHS, we took his retroactive eligibility, which resulted in a savings of about $304,000. Really, our biggest initiatives in this bill are two things: quality. We're doing a quality rating system. You all know if you went to a restaurant or a hotel, if it was a four-star restaurant or hotel versus a one-star, you'd know what you want to go to. For child care, giving consumers and parents the choices of this is a one-star child care, two-star, three-star, four-star, giving them a range of options. Also, for child cares, to know how they stack up and then they get grants to help improve and move through the system, as well as some extra money if they are in the third or four-star range. As well. So those are some of our big pieces. We also have the Office of Learning, Early Learning in here that is going to be slightly restructured with the amendment, which will be a director of early learning, trying to get DHS and MDE to work together on early childhood programs. So that's another big part of the initiative. So that would be the highlights of our bill.
Okay, we do have an amendment, but let's ask any questions first, if you wish. Any questions on the bill? Any questions on the funding of the bill? Any questions at all? Can we have an amendment? Representative Demmer, is this your amendment? Is that correct?
That's right.
Would you like to make such a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move the A4 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative moves the A4 amendment. You want to do some discussion and tell us what it does?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, House File 2088, Representative Slavik's Omnibus Early Childhood Bill, creates a new Office of Early Learning, and in discussion and to stay within targets, it was decided to do away with creating that office, Mr. Chair, not because it wouldn't have some benefits, but because it's not the right time. to do that. So essentially remove the office. I think in essence what it does is it leaves, the amendment leaves in the idea that we'd have a director appointed by the governor, and the governor could appoint the director, whoever he thinks is appropriate. He could appoint somebody already on staff at MDE, I believe it's MDE, or he could appoint someone from outside. So it leaves it at his discretion to appoint a director to work with the Portage House of Folks. So, Mr. Chair and members, that's the amendment.
And Representative Fawcett, for the record, your reaction to the amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, I consider a friendly amendment. Representative Demmer is the co-chair of the Early Childhood Caucus in the House, along with Representative Peterson, who's in the audience today, and I know they've worked hard on this, and this has been a high priority as we went through this process. The governor did write a letter, at least to the Senate proposal on the office, for that, saying that in these difficult times it would be hard potentially to do the full expansion. But in our case, we really see this as hopefully they're going to use existing staff, so this shouldn't cost anything extra. And what it will result in is a better coordinated system for early childhood, especially for all of those programs that are in two different places right now. So definitely consider a friendly amendment.
Okay, then we have the A4. Representative Demmer renews his motion, Amendment 8-2088A4. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Any other discussion on the bill? Representative Folks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wallach, is there any additional property tax levy authority in this bill?
Representative Slavik?
No.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Any other discussion? If not, then Representative Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion to move House File 2088, and it was recommended to pass. As amended.
As amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're on your way.
Thank you.
Representative Jones. Representative Paul, would you like to move?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 1122 is recommended to pass and go to General Register.
Representative Paul moves House File 1122. And Representative Junkies, or the first question, by the way, members, you should have this all in your packet. Put a rubber band around it. There should be also a spreadsheet, hopefully, in there. And Representative Junkie, you were given a target by the Ways and Means Committee. Are you within the target?
Have about $8,000 to fit there next year, Mr. Chair, so yeah.
We need every dollar and every dime, so we appreciate it coming in under the target. Representative Junkie, do you want to give a brief explanation?
Well, just briefly, this is the Agriculture and Veterans Affairs bill. It carries a number of accounts in it: Department of Agriculture, Board of Animal Health, Ag Utilization and Research Institute, Department of Veterans Affairs, and Department of Military Affairs are all within this bill. It is a fiscal and policy bill, so there's a lot of policy contained in this bill also for all those groups, and you'll see that in there, mainly individual bills that have been rolled into this. From the fiscal side, again, we've balanced out. The cuts we had to make mainly came from two large pots of money, which I think are of note. In agriculture, we have ethanol producer payments, which do not affect the general fund target or general fund dollars in the department. And so we kind of treat those as a separate entity, but it's a large entity, and we cut 20% out of that. However, they are required by statute to be made up into the future by deficiency payments. That was done a number of years ago when the governor had proposed eliminating the program at our last time we had budget problems. I think Representative Davids was maybe chair at that time, and we fought back valiantly. And while the payments were reduced, there's deficiency payments required to make them whole into the future. That remains the case. So even though there's cuts, entire payments will be made into the future. The other larger pot of money is what's called the Minnesota GI Bill. members, about 2 years ago, we had some questions and concerns when the federal government was not funding the GI Bill for veterans that come back from overseas service. They're able to apply for education benefits. And the administration in Washington at that time was not funding those. We became concerned and created what was called the Minnesota GI Bill. We put $6 million a year into the base for that. Fortunately, before we had to utilize those dollars a year ago, the federal government did come through with their commitment to the GI Bill. And so what we have now is a last dollar in program. And basically what that means is if you're a veteran and apply for educational benefits, they look at your tuition and whatever the federal government GI Bill, Pell Grants, scholarships, etc. do not pick up, then we're the last dollar in and we pick up the difference on that tuition. Instead of $6 million a year, the last 2 years, which is what our history is on this program, we've utilized less than $1 million a year. Less than $1 million a year, which consequently means there's about a $5 million a year surplus. We left about $1.5 million on the bottom line each year for this program, which we feel is probably 50% more than historically has been shown, but we want to make sure we covered any overruns that might be there. This is administered out of the higher ed department, but the money is carried in Veterans Affairs as Veterans Affairs money. But again, it's a separate pot of money that is not base dollars within the department or the Veterans Homes or Military Affairs. It's administered over in the Office of Higher Education. So the majority of the cuts came out of those two larger pots of money, which consequently held us fairly close. Actually, increases in the Veterans Homes and Veterans Affairs from their forecast base, and slight decreases, I will say, in agriculture, but more money than what the governor recommended in the department. So for overall balance, we think the bill is very good, and we made use of what we had to reach those targets, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Discussion. You do have an amendment?
I do.
Why don't we take that if you want to take that now?
Members,
let's bring it before us. I will move that Amendment H1122A46 be recommended pass.
And Mr. Chair, the 846 amendment basically reinstates some strictest language. For some reason, and I think this committee of all the committees would agree, there was some language coming over from the department that recommended no longer that ethanol plants would no longer have to report their financial status to the commissioner as they went into the deficiency payment stage, argument being they've already gotten their payments when the reports were made, and they've made those reports, and now they're just getting deficiency payments, so they should not have to report anymore. We think it's always good to report when you get government money, and rather than argue this on the floor, I thought it's best just to reinstate that language. I know they did debate it in the Senate the other day when they had their omnibus bill up, so I'd ask your support on the amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? Any discussion? If not, then all those in favor, the chair will remove the A46 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Okay, discussion on the bill as amended. Representative Weston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, just can you walk me through the ethanol side of it, what's being reduced at this time, and then how will the repayment process work? How many million?
Mr. Chair, Representative Weston. The ethanol producer payments, I'm going to use round numbers now, roughly $15 million a year. $30 million for the biennium. We reduce that by $3 million a year or $6 million a biennium, which is a 20% reduction. However, based on Minnesota statutes, we're required to make up that reduction in out years. So in year three and four, wherever it ends up, we are going to make deficiency payments to make up that 20% cut. So no plant, whether it's Morris or Benson or Little Falls or Buffalo Lake or any of them that are, there's about 11 plants still getting payments. None of those plants will be shorted a dime. They just have to take it in an extended period of time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, I imagine, as I recall, that number is falling off, and in several of the plants are soon reaching their 10 years, and some are probably in their repayment status only. Is that the case? And how fast does this number diminish down to zero? And then lastly, where does this, do we have any sort of protection for this money for rural Minnesota or other types of value-added products projects as this money gets paid out and meets the 10-year obligation we originally set out?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Westrom, you're correct. A number of plants have already come off. You're exactly right. They do not receive payments. And by the way, new plants do not receive payments either. This was only for the original plants that were built. There's about, I'm guessing now, but there's only a handful, three or four, maybe five plants that are still getting actual producer payments. The rest are in a deficiency payment status right now. Had we not made those reductions 5 years ago, most plants would have been done by now, or within the next year or two. Frankly, the deficiency payments were scheduled to go out about 3 years, and most would be done now. It'll probably be an extra year, 4 years. And yes, any ethanol money in our bill still maintains its base status, so it is base dollars, and it is our plan to set up an account over the next 2 or 4 years to capture that for one use, for example, is next-gen dollars. The quicker we can get out of here, the more we can fund next-gen energy grants for that next generation of biofuels or economic development with biofuels in rural Minnesota. So we are planning to utilize those dollars in a base level, but for other things other than the corn ethanol plant payments.
Okay. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have questions in two areas. First is to the ethanol, to the deficiency payment again. And the question in that area is, do we end up paying interest when we do this type of shift and pay, do deficiency payments? And then I have another question.
Mr. Chair, but I do not think there's interest. The department can correct me if they're sitting here. But I don't think there's interest. In fact, I had advocated 2 years ago we should front load those and get them out of the way, and we'd be done with them today, and it would have been at a discount because of the discounted money value if you would have forwarded those payments, but I didn't win that argument. So we're still going, but there's no interest.
Representative Bunn, a follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, on a different topic. Representative Johnson, I would ask you to explain further for us that this issue of some of the criticisms that I've heard related to this bill and that I think are unfounded, and so I just want to hear you state publicly really clearly about this. One is I bumped into some veterans from my district in the hallway outside the room when this bill, I believe, was about to be heard in the last week. And one of them said to me offhandly, you know, they're cutting veterans by 25%. That's why we're all here today. So I found that surprising that that you would be doing that, and I don't think you have. But I wanted to, and then there was comments today, of course, on the floor related to cuts. And so I would like you to address that issue and ask specifically, is this calculation that's being done based on this issue you raised of the reduction from the $6 million to the $1.5 million based on that money wasn't being used anyway? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Bunn, yes, if you actually dissect, as I kind of brought out to begin with, take the ethanol pot of money and remove it from Department of Agriculture because it is not part of their base funding. It's a separate account. And take the GI Bill, set it here, and then look at Veterans Affairs and Homes and Military Affairs as separate entities in their operations. Basically, what you see is in the veterans part of it, veterans homes, you actually see if you look at projected or forecast base, we're actually $2.5 million higher than what the forecast base that came to us was in our February forecast. And if you look at veterans services, less the veterans homes and GI Bill, which we just talked about, you actually get $928,000 over the forecast base. So you're right. The cuts are the $9 million that we reduced.
Just a second, Representative Dunkey.
Yeah.
I think all of us are having a little bit. I think it's on, is it line 276? Is that correct? Maybe you can, on the, is that what your question is? Yeah, that's, I'm looking forward also to that. You can point out where those are, or what line we're on for your...
I'm on my own line, Mr. Chair, right here.
I understand that, but maybe your fifth analyst can help us.
And I don't know if our spreadsheet is dissected that way, and that's going to be one of the difficulties. I've actually pulled the numbers out of the spreadsheet, and I have my own spreadsheet here, which shows the different accounts, and they're not necessarily counted for that way, but maybe Mr. Reinholtz can...
Mr. Reinholtz, you can identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Reinholtz, fiscal analyst with the Ag Finance Committee. If I understand, the explanation was the difference in the committee's recommendation versus the base on the veterans' home is what Chairman Junkie was talking about. And that does show up, and I may not have the... on 294 on my spreadsheet, I'm not sure I have the same spreadsheet mm-hmm. that you have at this point. That it's titled the Veterans Home Program Total.
Yes, it does.
You can see there in column J, it's... Chairman Junkie was saying the base is $83,312,000 for the homes program, and you look over at AD and you'll see the committee's recommendations are 85.8. Mm-hmm. So that's where he was pointing out the $2 million increase in forecasted base.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Representative Holbrook, does that help you with following that?
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the line numbers. I'm still not tracking. I think you talked more about, a number of programs, and
so
I think there's cuts in other areas, so I'm trying to figure out where.
If you back up again, that's exactly that's the right line, Mr. Chair, and that shows a $2.5 million, $2.575 million difference in forecast base, our bill over that base. And again, if you look at the Veterans Department of Veterans Affairs, it's $928,000. And the reason I'm dissecting is they're all in Department of Veterans Affairs, but they're somewhat separate accounts, somewhat shared. The veterans' homes were rolled in there a year ago by governor's executive order, and they share services like financial director, legislative liaison, commissioner, etc. So they have shared costs. But we do fund all the five homes separately, and they made separate presentations to us in committee. And if you would look at the bottom line cut for all of veterans, you will see a large cut. And that includes, as Representative Bunn brought up, the cuts in the GI Bill, which are bottom line dollars and not earmarked for anything. And history has shown we're not going to use those dollars in any way, shape, or form. So yes, if you count $9 million cut from the GI Bill, you would, if you were uninformed, you would think that that's coming from Veterans Homes or the Department of Veterans Affairs. It is not. It's coming out of the GI Bill, which is separate from their general fund operations.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you. On line 288 of the bill, it talks about maintaining current services at the homes, and it looks like the committee recommendation is $4 million less than the governor's.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, what's contained in there and what was debated in committee, since day one when we got our budget books, that was indicated to be salary supplements for the workers, the state workers at the homes. And as you know, in previous years, we generally put salary supplements in every finance bill of 2% or 1% or 3%, depending on what we decide as a legislature. Move it forward, let the negotiations happen. This bill, along with, I think, maybe corrections, parts of the corrections bill had some salary supplements, which leadership and others decided we weren't going to give salary subs to one group of state employees and not the other. The reason we put some money back into there, $1.2 million, is the department came on the day of our bill presentation when we were marking it up and said, oh, wait a minute, we did put it all in as full-time equivalents for salary supplements, but we should have broken out. There was some needs for overruns in pharmaceuticals and food, that we needed to meet some costs. So we asked them what that amount was. It was just under $1.2 million. So we added back in $600,000 a year for pharmaceutical and food overruns in the homes, and we addressed that this year so that they could meet their bills on those two items.
Chair, I'm trying to figure out from my calculation, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I certainly might be. I show approximately $16 million less in your budget, so if you back off the $4 on the salary issue and the $6 on the... thank you, the GI...
$9 on the GI.
Okay. And then where else did the... We lose funding for the...
There was some reductions, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, there were some reductions in a request for technology. We reduced that somewhat. And the other reduction we had was in repair and betterment money. And reason being on that, we did comb the list. Number one, we front-loaded the money more than they had in the department so we can get those jobs out there, construction jobs. But number two, there was a number of items in that list that we thought were bondable. Mm-hmm. And this should be for non-bondable items in here. And the bonding committee, we take care of veterans' homes and bondable items, things like boiler replacements, some of things like that. Carpet flooring, some of that is probably what's included here. But we did think there were some fixtures and some permanent attachments that were bondable, and so that ended up being about 25%, and we reduced that. But again, none of that is to the operations. That's to repair and betterment issues, maintenance issues, but not to personnel or services.
And Representative Holberg, I remember the discussion in the bonding committee on that particular item, and we've had the bonding committee had kind of extensive discussions on it, and it seems appropriate for those bonding items to be in the carried in the bondable items to be carried in the bonding committee.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, even with those reductions from the governor's request, we're still above the forecast base, even with those reductions to the actual homes and the Department of Veterans Affairs.
I want to discuss a little bit, Representative Bunn, to clarify your question that you had on the excess that was in the count, the $9 million. That was aware last year as well that there was some excess money in that in 2009, and we used the excess money in 2009 and then put in a requirement in session law that said you had to forecast this money. Mm-hmm. Now, if we don't address this in this particular way, I mean, that's why the money went back up, is because we said you have to forecast it as the base was before, even though it wasn't used in the last year as well. But what would happen on this in a normal circumstances, if we did not, if this legislature didn't make that changes, then, and it's not used, then every year when it comes up at the end of the biennium, we have a forecast of how much is on the bottom line that's not being used, and usually that's $20 to $25 million, and that would become part of that particular number. So this will redirect it into some of the activities.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding this won't show up in the base starting next biennium.
That's correct.
The way we've handled it. So that excess will go away, and it'll be, if we had to do the same exercise 2 years from now we did this year without those dollars, it would have been excruciating.
Representative Holbert.
Just one question. I think this will be for you, Mr. Chair, and there's a line item here of a savings of $33,000 for governor's staff, and I'm for my hours and hours on state government finance. I'm not sure this money is actually showing up in Representative Tom's targets given the cuts. So how are we working with this? It seems like we're showing salary savings in these various department bills, but I don't see the money showing up in Representative Tom's bills to pay for these positions.
Maybe that's myself, so maybe you can answer your own question better since you serve on that committee, but I'm going to punt over to Representative Tom.
So we do put in that, we do put an increase in the governor's budget.
to cover those positions, and we do put language that says that it's deducted. Now, we were going to arithmetically deal with it, but it seems that that it was too complicated, and the fact that some divisions are taking that money off and others aren't. But it's clear it's not double counted and it's not double cut.
And
so there's an addition to the governor's budget, and then the cuts are occurring in those other budgets, and there's a line that says that money is cut.
And so, Mr. Chair and Chair Khan, if we were to add up all these little onesies, twosies, that equal what's in your bill?
I don't think so, because I'm not sure that everybody. We have to get to 7, and we got to get to the D.C. office and that sort of thing.
All right. Thank you.
But there's a line that covers it if it doesn't equal it.
Okay, we have a couple other people on the list. Representative Bundy, you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be very clear back to the issue of the $9 million, because I think it's so crucial to your discussion about the bill. Where exactly does that show up on the spreadsheet, first of all? And secondly, I'm looking also at line 304 in the Veteran Affairs Department totals, and again comparing that column J to the column AD, and I see a reduction. And is that related to the 9 at all, or is the 9 someplace else in the spreadsheet?
The Representative Junkie. You see the GI bill as a line item on mine. It's 262.
Okay.
Let's see if it's the same here.
There you see 9.1 million reduction and 4.55 in each year reduction.
Okay.
That's it.
Yep.
Okay, and the second part of your question
was the question again?
The question was about line 304, because we were trying to identify the major categories of reductions that occur here. And what is this? Comparing column J to column AD, as was done before, there seems to be a reduction of almost $5 million, and wanted to see what that was about.
That's the totals.
There is a reduction if you look at the totals, like I said, if you don't break all those out. Yes, you will see. That's the total reduction, including everything above that you've already talked about.
So even though the vet homes $4 million was listed here, it's listed again under this?
So that's the total of all
includes
of the
vets homes, the Department of Veterans Affairs, the GI Bill, and the increases we made, the decreases we made.
Thank you. Okay.
That's
the total
amount.
My first time with this spreadsheet.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, my question is centered around Section 11 of the veterans. You've got in to establish a new veterans.
Can you give us the page number,
page please? 73, line 20. It's Section 11, and I think this is an interesting proposal. My concern is it looks like you're doing it with no state money, and what potentially will be the effect to Minnesota Veterans Home, like the one I have in Hastings or the one in Laverne or Silver Bay?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magner, this is a geriatric MI facility that's been planned and approved by the old Veterans Home Board for about the last 5 years. This is the same provision that's carried in the bonding bill that passed the House. However, you're right, as a backup, if that fails in bonding, the local communities have agreed to carry those bonds locally, similar, almost exactly the same model we used for Fergus Falls. That was done without state money also when we utilized that facility. So what it would mean in probably 5 years when that structure is up is there will be those homes run, your home and the other four run on about $8 million a year, and about 57% of that is state dollars. And so this would be a similar, I assume, fiscal note, but it's out three bienniums.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Junkie, if we assume that there was a limited pot of money, that the state government didn't have an endless pot of money, so there would be possible reductions at one of the five existing veterans' homes, then to make the one in Candiota County?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, it would be my assumption there would be an increase in the base budget to fund those homes, just like there was. I don't suspect when Fergus Falls and Laverne were opened, which were the last two open, there was a reduction in Minneapolis, Silver Bay, or Hastings. There was additional monies put in, and that it should be the way this works also.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Junkie, you would not support cutting one of the other five?
In fact, Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, we actually, for your Hastings home, we're actually adding some mental health dollars out there. You'll see in the budget on a line item that I'm not sure if it's in the Senate bill or not. I know it wasn't in the minority report today, but we're adding mental health programming out to your facility today, too. We're actually increasing it. And yes, I would support the increases, not the reductions.
Representative McNamara, is that it?
Well, just to the comment, and Representative Junkie, that's a real important program in Hastings because we have a lot of the younger veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan that have challenges, and that's why that money's coming to Hastings. Very appropriate and very important. Thank you.
And we put her in.
Okay, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, can you just remind us again the dollars that were reinstated for MACV? What the appropriations are and where we can find that.
Can you be so kind,
Mr. Chair?
Wait a second, Representative Chuck. Can you first of all tell us what that acronym is?
Line 264, the Minnesota Assistant Council grant increase.
Thank you.
$350,000 a year for what's called the MACV program, which is a homeless veterans program. There's shelters, I believe, in Mankato and Duluth and the Twin Cities, I know for sure. And they have a base appropriation of $250,000 a year. We increase that base by additional $350,000 or $700,000 in the biennial.
Did you find a representative head on with us?
It's called Minnesota Assistant Council Grant Increase.
Okay, any other discussion? Any other discussion on the bill? Any other discussion? Representative Polk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion to move House File 1122 as amended to the General Register with recommendation to pass.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried. Can't vote against your own getting an increase in their own veterans' home, Representative McNamara.
Yep.
Mm. All right, on Friday, I'm surprised, shocked, and dismayed.
I'll be up there right now. Am I up, Mr.
Yeah, you're up. Well, I guess you're there, whether you are up or not. Okay. Representative Mahoney, would you like to be so kind as to move?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 2083 be recommended to pass and place in the General Register.
Representative Mahoney makes the motion, and members, that should be in your the House file is in, and the House file is 869. So we have the Senate file in our possession. Members, we did not copy the Senate file because the first motion is we're going to put the House language back in the Senate file. So, Representative Mahoney, would you so move?
I would so move that we delete the Senate language and insert the language from House File 869.
So we have the amendment to insert the House language into the Senate file. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. And Representative Mukavina, do you want to explain it? There are a couple of other amendments, I believe.
Mr. Chair,
one amendment.
You told me to be brief, so if you look on page 3 of the bill, you'll see that I've met my targets, and it's a pretty good bill, and I appreciate your support.
This is
my non-controversial bill. Everything's been taken out of it that's in the other bill that'll be coming later on. So, Mr. Chair, members, really the only difference in this bill, I spend the same amount as the governor. I believe the only real significant difference is where I spend the state grant program money, where the governor had his Achieve scholarship. We eliminated that money and we put it in the overall state grant program. The only thing I can think of that might be a little controversial is the language for the University of Minnesota's stadium bill regarding alcohol being served. And other than that, it's pretty much similar to the governor's. We use the same dollar amount at Minsky and at the university, and use the same the fiscal stabilization money the same way as the governor's. So, just for the committee's information, we allow the Minsky tuition to go up 5% a year, and then tell them to use stimulus money to buy it back down
to 2% and at the university. The same thing, we have them going up $300 a year in tuition fees for each year for Minnesota undergraduate residents. And again, they use the stimulus money. And there's a middle income.
Representative, look at me just a minute. I know people like to have conversations, but.
And so, Mr. Chair, that's basically the bill and stuff like that you might be
in. And you are within your target?
I am, Chair.
Actually, the zero?
Perfect.
You
right
spend
on.
Every
on
dollar?
The money. Mm-hmm. Right on the button.
You couldn't even come in $1?
Mr. Chair, I thought you'd be ashamed of me if I did that.
Okay, we do have an amendment before us. It's the A6th Amendment, is that correct?
No, mine says A5, but... excuse me. No, mine says A6.
Okay, the chair will move the amendment 808-6986. Representative Rukavina, do you want to explain the amendment?
Mr. Chair, what this does is represent Biffkin's bill, which offers a negotiated tuition, flat tuition. It looked like the people were concerned that it had to be, that a family must accept it. And what we meant to say is that Minsky and University must offer the option to families. They don't have to take it. But, so that's basically what it does, is clarify that. And the only other thing in there is the public employee on line 110 through the rest of the amendment. That's a reference to an old section of law regarding metropolitan state, and it inadvertently got pulled out of the bill when we transferred all of Representative Kahn's voter language that was in the bill into her bill, and this was a small section in there that got pulled out, so we need that back in the bill. It's just a technical amendment.
Technical. Any discussion on the amendment that's before? Representative Biskins will be happy with this, right? Okay, we have the amendment before us, the A6th Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Okay, Representative Rukavina's bill is before us. Questions at all? Any discussion? Representative Bond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, I wanted to know on your Section 3 regarding purchase of clothing in stores, whether it be... university specific clothing or athletic clothing, other kinds of clothing. Did your committee receive testimony on this issue? Are universities, public schools already doing this? Or did they testify as to what this might do to the cost of clothing throughout their stores?
Members, it's page 2020. American clothing.
Representative Bond, this is
Representative Rukavina.
In keeping with my Made in America. Lying and thinking, I did not have any testimony, but I think it's a pretty good idea.
Representative Bond.
But nobody complained about it at the university or Minsky.
Well, I'm representing, I was just saying, this is probably a pretty large part of sales at some of these schools, and I just was curious if we could, I'm willing to support you today on this, but I would be interested in hearing from our public universities and colleges about any potential unanticipated impact of this for them. So, thank you.
Okay. Other discussion? Question? Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I know you're concerned about the students at the colleges. Can you just assure me that you've got a tuition cap of, say, 0% for students in here? What are you doing for the students?
Chair, Representative Westrum, it's a kind of briefly touched on it. What we did in the bill is Minsky is going to go to 5% and 5% increase over the two-year period each year, but they're going to buy the tuition back down to 2% the first year and another 2% the second year with the spread of stimulus money. At the University of Minnesota, that language, I don't know where exactly it is, but what it does basically is the same thing, except that it limits the increase to $300 the first year and $300 the second year for tuition at the university, and then they buy the increase to, you know, down with the federal stimulus money. But I want to be perfectly clear to everybody in this room that
you know, in the next biennium, when we don't have federal stimulus money, we are going to see some huge increases, much like the Republican House caucus did in the 2003 and 4 session, or we're going to see big layoffs, or we're going to see something happen, because we won't have the, you know, what if you want to look on members on line 79 for the federal, for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the $65+ million a year from the stimulus package for them, and for the university, the 231 over the biennium, $231 million, it won't be coming in. So that's a scoop there, Representative Westrom, so everybody's assured of that. But with the federal stimulus money, we were lucky enough to not take a big hit this year, and we directed both systems to use that money to keep tuition low. So is the increase zero? No, but I did a little better than you did, Representative Westrom, when you were in charge. It's 2 and 2 and 300 and 300.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Westrom,
for the listening public, what they just heard, Representative Rukavina, is you're pushing it off 2 years rather than maybe making some tougher decisions now. You're going to compound the problems 2 years from now.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina,
be perfectly clear to everybody, I just, you know, got that, you know, honest Iron Ranger in me, that I want everybody to know what's going to happen. I hope the economy gets better and we don't, and we raise more revenue in this state. But I did exactly what the governor did, and the governor told me to privately that he said put a tuition cap on and blame me. So that's what I'm doing, Governor. I'm blaming you. I did what you asked me.
Mr. Chair,
actually, Representative Westrom, I think I was there when he said that.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad to see our Representative Rukavina and you and the governor have reconciled.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that.
Trying to get along.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, one other thing. Representative Rukavina, have you explored any thing more for students to be able to lock in their tuition costs when they come their freshman year? Have you guys done any more with that idea that's been floating around?
Representative Westrom, I did touch on that in the amendment too. It's the Biskin bill is in the bill, and which lets them lock on. But you know, so that's in the bill, and I fixed up the language a little bit so it was more clear.
Representative Westrom, I think that came in late, so you may not have had that on your computer.
Okay.
Other discussion on the bill? Any other discussion? Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, you touched on the liquor in the new football stadium. And what's the economic impact? Was there a proposal to limit where that could be? Or what exactly was the university wanting to do there? And what's the economic impact for the state? Is there any in regards to the stadium or the bonds?
Well, Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so. Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I and a bunch of others, including both the Republicans and Democrats on the committee and in other committees, felt that if the university was going to sell alcohol, which they voted to do, they had special legislation passed when the stadium bill was done several years ago that allowed them to sell liquor, I believe, at 7 different sites, Ms. Novak, is it 7, at the campus. And so last fall, I believe it was, or maybe early winter, they voted to allow the liquor license at the football stadium, but only, you know, in the Chardonnay seats up at the top. And so I put it in that they either the beer seats get it too, or nobody gets it. That's all.
I think it was in the Scotch seats. Representative Rukavina, to that issue, right now
I don't think Chardonnay.
The university plays at the Metrodome. Is liquor sales available at university games at the Metrodome?
To anybody that's of legal age, yes.
Okay. Representative McNamara.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, how about on the shores of Lake Superior where they play hockey? If they were to limit the liquor in that new building to the, what do you call them, the Chardonnay seats, would you work to make sure that the beer seats get it there too if they decide to go that route?
Representative Rukavina?
Oh, definitely. They would never dare do that in the Duluth area.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I wouldn't want our alma mater up there to be treated any differently.
Other discussion? Representative Fulbright?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Rukavina, there's no Republicans on your committee, on the Ways and Means Committee, so I think you're going to get a pass tonight from our side as well. But can you tell me, is the data issue in this bill on the investment data shielding the public from that?
Mr. Representative Rukavina,
Chair,
maybe you can point out the language you're talking about.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I know what you're referring to, and you and I are kind of on the same page on this, and I wouldn't carry the bill, and I wouldn't do what they asked me to, and so they gave it to somebody else, and it's been a data practice bill of Representative Mullery's omnibus data practice bill.
And Mr. Chair, I think it's in the Senate higher ed bill, too.
Be in the Senate higher, but it's not in this bill.
All right. Thank you.
Other questions? Any other questions at all? Any other questions? Then Representative Mahoney, would you like to renew your motion that House file?
We're going to use the Senate file 2083 be recommended to pass and place in the general register.
As amended.
As amended.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried.
Thank you, member.
We're making fun. No, it's Senate file 2083. 155. Representative Rukavina, would you have Representative Rukavina just come back in?
Let him move quickly and I will get shot.
He's going for a beer. We just... There was a little concern that we had the wrong number on the Senate file. It is the correct number.
Yep.
Our motions are correct. Okay? So, I just wanted to make sure he doesn't have to come back. Okay. Thank you. Representative Mariotti, would you like to be the next bill we're going to consider, by the way, is the omnibus K-12, House File 2. Would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 2 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Representative Mariotti makes that motion. Representative Greiling, you were given a target, and the members, there should be a... spreadsheet should be there. Look at the spreadsheet, members, in your... And Representative Greiling, you were given a target. Would you like to give us some statistics? Have you met your target?
Mr. Chair, as you know, we've had steady funding and no increase, and hence we made no decreases in this bill. So we have met our target. We did add in the Finance Committee the Library section from Representative Murphy's committee. So that's where you see the new $33 million.
That is part of your target.
That is now part of our target. But otherwise, we didn't have any financial changes in this bill other than those that revolve around the SHIP.
Steve, you want to give us the next quick explanation of your bill?
Thank you.
Particularly on the fiscal spreadsheet, and then we'll deal with amendments later. Okay?
Mm. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As you can see, there's a lot of zeros on the fiscal spreadsheet. So I'll just kind of give the highlights. The goal of this bill was the stable funding without any adding or subtracting of financial components in our line items. And so we did do more policy. We worked on not having any new mandates. We had mandate bills proposed that we did not accept this year things we've had in previous bills that we really liked, like FIAD standards, world language, sex education. We decided not to do anything new with schools mandating anything this year since there's no new funding. We also worked very hard through the leadership of Representative Tilbury on this committee to have reduced mandates. And then we also had a special education work group chaired by Representative Newton that came out with significantly less special education mandates. We have some good policy in this bill, and I'll leave that to our chair, policy chair, Representative Mariani, to highlight. And then we have in here the New Minnesota Miracle, which was the original House File 2, which starts being implemented in 2014 on a ramp up of a 4-year timeline to get it phased in. And costing $600 million in the first year and $1.3 billion in the second year. But that's outside of the 4 years that your targets look at. The shift, we have, as you know, that instead of 90-10 for the school age payment shift, we have 73-27, and then the property tax payment shift is recognized this June, with 49.1% of revenue recognized in June, $600 million for this biennium. And then we do have $275.6 million in the Federal Stabilization Fund. And then we have $7.2 million that we're spending for, because of the shift, as we traditionally do for the districts that are in statutory operating debt that wouldn't be able to do, therefore, so easily the short-term borrowing. We didn't change any of the levies. And, Mr. Chair, those are the financial pieces, and I will leave it to Representative Mariani to talk about major highlights in the policy areas.
Okay. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I'll make this very brief. There are a number of policy initiatives in the bill that come out of the policy committee and further developed in the finance committee. Some of the larger ones have to do with continuing to modernize our school accountability system with the use of multiple measures on our state report card, moving away from the MCA2s for the computer adaptive test framework, which is more helpful. Moving away from the MCA2s to computer adaptive test, which is meant to be more helpful for instruction in our schools. There's a large part of the bill having to do with reforming accountability and conflicts, addressing conflicts of interest inside our charter school laws. There's a section that addresses the grad math test potential bad outcome for next year. There is special ed reform in the bill. There's also many reductions that Representative Grayling spoke about. There's also some shared services reform efforts inside the bill and some teacher professional development work as well. It's a good, well-rounded bill. Lots of good folks worked awfully hard on it, and look forward to continuing the discussion with good policy and state policy.
Okay, we have a couple of amendments. One is the A55.
Mr. Chair, that's the author's amendment, and I would move that amendment.
A55. Do you want to explain the amendment, Representative
Barry? Yes, Mr. Chair, members. This is a compilation of a variety of topics. The first one on line 1.2 to 1.3 is some language for boiler operator training that was worked on by Representative Mahoney, and we heard it in the committee, but it wasn't quite worked out with the parties. Now it is. On lines 1.4 and 1.7, this is some language brought to us by the Department of Education. They and the PAC committee agreed that these changes should have been written into the 2008 PAC committee bill, but now they are clarifying what they really meant. The pages or lines 1.9 through 1.19 are come to us from Representative Mullery, clarifying that a parent or guardian of a student may designate another individual to participate in school conferences to stand in their place. Let's see. Then we have on page 2 of the amendment, some language regarding TUCOMP brought to us by Representative Mariani on 2.10. This is some career and technical language. That's a technical amendment from the Article 9, which is the new Minnesota Miracle section, and it's what the fiscal staff had meant to have in there, and that's to correct it. And then the final section regarding education records is another technical amendment brought to us by the revisor's office.
Okay, we have the amendment before us. Any discussion on Representative Demers?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Greiling, I'm looking at this on your amendment, line 1.2, 1.3. We're basically taking staff development dollars here and using it to send maintenance staff boiler training. And have we used staff development dollars for non-certified staff in the past, Representative Greiling? Is that what we have intended for staff development, Representative Greiling?
Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Demmer. As you know, that staff development dollars are up to the local school district to decide how they're going to use it. So we don't have that it has to be for just teachers, it's for staff. And this is language that Representative Mahoney worked on with the Minnesota School Board Association, so he may want to clarify that as well.
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, and having worked on this with Representative Gunther and myself, what this is the maintenance staff works in the boiler room. And they came to us saying that they're not very well, they're not trained at all in the boiler rooms and what to do. How to shut off a valve, how to turn the thermostats, because they've now become computerized control systems in most schools. They are supposed to be trained to begin with. There's another bill over in coming through from Dolly, Department of Labor and Industry, where they've agreed to do most of the training, but the master, the boiler chief, has to do training in order to keep their license up. So this is, the school boards came to us and said, we really believe that there's going to be money needed here. The department, the boiler chiefs, the people, the custodians said, no, we're saw what we're going to do anyhow. Putting it in here is pretty much comfort language just in case three people are wrong and one person is right. We don't really expect this to cost any money, but we're just allowing the schools, if it does, to be able to take the small amount out, because the department has said they'll do at least 2 hours of the training. The boiler chief is supposed to do the other six that they're already required to do anyhow for their custodian. It shouldn't cost any money, but more comfort language than anything else.
Thank you.
Other on the amendment?
I understand how bills are moving quickly. We've been pretty good about not having non-finance. I think we had one on the last bill, one here, and if we're going to start going down that road, then the majority would like the same opportunity.
This one is a technical or financial, I think.
Mr. Chair, the whole issue about student records, and certainly I've seen this before, given that I've been around here a number of years, but it's definitely data issues. I don't believe that bill ever went to the Civil Law Committee.
Are you asking for a division?
Mr. Chair, I'm just referring to you as chair of the committee and your rules for this committee, and the previous one, we also had an amendment that was more technical in nature and kind of a little here and a little there. But this particular one, now we're going with whole policy statements that basically entail a whole bill. And I'd just like to know if the rules are changing or...
Well, Mr. Representative Fulbert, the amendment itself has some technical aspects and so... this aspect to it. There is a section, if you wish, I'm trying my best not to do those. If you want to make a vote that on dividing it, that would be acceptable. The amendment itself is as a whole is before us, but there are some policy things in this.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I'm not totally familiar with all aspects of the bill, but I'm assuming that you would have to delete out the Chapter 13 stuff, lines 1.8 to 2.7. And I'm not sure if the next section of the amendment is fiscal or not.
I think that's technical, my understanding. So, is that your motion to delete 1.8 to 2.7? That is policy, I think I would say.
Yes. And Mr. Chair, if I could, lines 2.8 and 2.9 are pure policy. And specifically, in looking at that, Mr. Chair, that was debated at length, both in the
policy... 2.8 and 2.9?
And of the amendment, yeah. That's removing some language. There was debate about that both in the policy committee and in the finance committee, and that language was amended in during finance almost unanimously after some lengthy debate, and here we are now in Ways and Means taking that back out again. It's pure policy, Mr. Chair.
Well, no, Representative Mariani, we have two things going for us right now. Representative Holberg had some questions on 1.8 to 2.7, and then you have questions on 2.8 and 2.9. Let's see if we can deal with them separately. Is that okay?
Sure. Well, Mr. Chair, the only reason I brought it up is you were talking about the policy and...
Okay. Representative Holberg, are you asking to amend out page 1.8 to 2.7?
Mr. Chair, yes, I guess I'd make that a motion.
We have that is strictly policy, and I guess, the Chair, I would say that I would agree with the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Carried. There's another question on 2.8 and 2.9. Representative Mariani, let me take a look at that, if you would, please. Fiscal or technical?
Mr. Chair, there are fiscal implications with the language that was inserted in the last committee. And frankly, we were a little bit surprised with the amendments, and we voted subsequently later. We looked at it and realized that what we had done was, in fact, to reinstate the need for districts to have periodically trained evaluation teams. Members to do this evaluation work. Members, that's not a big deal in St. Paul, but I can tell you for a lot of small rural districts, that's going to be a big deal. And what Representative Cass tried to do with his bill was to introduce, quite frankly, in a policy way, a different way to do this in a much more comprehensive way, but also to do it in a comprehensive way that provided flexibility for particularly small districts who can't afford to have periodically trained evaluation teams doing objective evaluations subject to this law of QCOP. And so he created, in my opinion, sort of the best of two worlds. So I think this is appropriate for the Ways and Means to have this here because we are, in fact, addressing an issue that is going to create some fiscal strains for a good number of school districts across the state. Again, some of our bigger school districts are probably not going to face this issue, but certainly many of our small ones will.
Representative Guidance on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think that the committee made a good call on the previous motion by Representative Holberg in terms of policy versus finance or technical. On this one, I have been on both sides of this. I agreed with Representative Demmer, and Representative Becky actually put this amendment in the K-12 Finance Committee, and I think that none of us on there realized it was a fiscal issue or what it actually did. And so I have been persuaded by actually Representative Taft for the reasons that Rep. Mariani has laid out here. When those of us were talking about it who knew what we were doing, which did not include me on the discussion of the new language versus the old language, all the ones that we relied on to know that were all from big districts who like the current evaluation system team and have the funding to go along with it and are able to do that, and it's working really well. So we thought, why would we want to change it? But then when Representative Taft explained to us that he wanted this other language so that smaller districts with less funding and less administrators could also have a better chance to participate in QCOMP, this language would work well for them, but yet it would still allow the big districts to continue on with their current method. And so I was persuaded then, and I think it is financial then, because of the fact that small districts can't afford to fund the full teams. And that's why QCOMP, Mr. Chair, is mostly in the metro area, and in the metro area mostly in the suburbs. So this is intended to help out actually districts like Hayfield.
It appears that she knows how to hit the right at the heart, doesn't she? Representative Demmer.
Mr. Chair, this is my seventh year. I have served on at least two committees with Representative Greiling for each of my 7 years, and he does know how to do that very, very well. And I appreciate you bringing up my school, Representative Greiling. I understand what you're saying, but quite frankly, this is all new discussion. We did not have a fiscal discussion about this, for sure in policy, and for sure not in K-12 finance. It was not a fiscal issue whatsoever. This has to do with the evaluation of staff during QCOMP is what it is. And there was no, when Representative Taft offered his amendment and there was debate about that in policy, and again, we debated it in finance, there was no fiscal notes, there was no discussion about we're doing this to save money. This is a new argument, Mr. Chair, and this is, as you can tell, this is an education argument that should be done either in policy and or in finance. And that argument, I'm not going to debate the merits of it, but it was not discussed in this manner in K-12 finance.
Well, I've persuaded that we're trying to be as flexible as possible, and I'm persuaded that it seems to be that these have be technical or fiscal in nature somehow. I don't have a fiscal note on lots of things that we do, but I think I will allow it to be voted on. But I do have a question and clarification with, in effect, with the amendment as I look on page 52. Are we then, in effect, striking everything on lines 10 and 11 except the B? Is that correct, Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. And so B with the highway 5210 would B would remain, then we'd go down to line 5212.
That's
okay.
Correct.
So the new language would stay in there. Okay. Any discussion on the amendment itself? Then I will say that it has some fiscal implications. Okay, Representative Winchum.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm tending to believe I want to actually support Representative Mariani on this, but I'm curious from other members that have rural districts that might be mostly impacted. I think Representative Mariani talked on that, but I guess others with rural districts, I think, might want to key in on this, just because it sounds like it's a bit of a divide, and depending upon the size of the school, especially. But
Representative Westrom, I have zero knowledge on that as well, so I'm taking those that are probably more experienced on this their advice. But Representative Mariani, would you like to respond to Representative Westrom's concern?
Mr. Chair, again, I don't represent a small rural district. I have spent some time with Representative Taft this morning, and he reiterated to me that part of the design in his original bill, we passed it out of policy, was to do many things, including addressing the issue of small rural districts being able to implement this program without the burdensome expectation of having periodically trained teams to do that, understanding that that would, is a burdensome cost to small districts.
Okay, I have Representative Demmer and Representative Briner. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I do represent small districts. I've got a number of them. And, again, this has to do with members and Mr. Chair, QCOMP is about a pay for performance, but it's also very, very much about staff development and improving staff. That's what this deals with. This deals with how we evaluate go through a staff development process. And what this language is doing is talking about the manner in which that happens. The evaluation team that we're talking about here is actually teachers within that district. Some that would become mentors, some that would other teachers, and it has to do with the existing staff and how they set up their professional development. It's not like you're hiring somebody and bringing in a staff from outside or that sort of thing, because it's again about giving staff development evaluations for the teachers who are there. And that's why, as Representative Mariani just said, it was introduced in K-12 policy because it wasn't fiscal, and that's where it came. And then it had...
Of course, Representative Demmer, lots of things are in policy to be... That
well, I understand,
right.
Mr. Chair, but you have said yourself that, well, we may question sometimes the fiscal notes. They might be accurate, they might be not. That's what we have or don't have.
Sure.
And in this case, to talk about this being a big fiscal thing, when there was no fiscal note asked for, there was none talked about, it was introduced, it was sent to K-12 policy, and that's where it was put in the bill. It was K-12 policy when it came in here. And, you know, I have to also add, Mr. Chair, in terms of the fiscal part of it, you know, school districts receive $260 a pupil when they're in QCOMP, so it's not like there's no money involved here. So this is about policy. This is about how we evaluate teachers in the QCOMP staff development process. And there's a discussion about how it should be done, and that's what it's about.
I don't have a good basis to judge one way or the other, other than my friend said this and my other friend said that. So I think we'll try to vote on it to take some kind of a stand. I do have a Representative Briner and then Representative Wilson.
I'll just be brief, Mr. Chair, but I'd like to corroborate Representative Mariani's comments. I'm not from a small district. Mankato's a regional center, and we are large enough to instill QCOMP in the way that it was originally intended, but we actually have had this discussion in our district, and I sat on a QCOMP planning committee for 4 years, so I'm pretty familiar with the law and different models, and there is a constraint on smaller districts in terms of their ability to pull teachers out of the classroom to do that evaluative function, and you can argue whether the money in QCOMP is satisfactory to that or not, but I have heard that discussion for a number of years from our neighboring districts.
Representative Holbrook?
My question is to lines 2 and 3 of phase 1 of the amendment, so I don't know if we're...
Okay, let's try to dispose of this if we may. Any other discussion on that? Okay, Representative Holbrook, back to page 2 and 3 of which part of the whole amendment? Are you asking for a separate vote on that? Representative Demmer?
Mr. Chair, if I could, if we could divide the amendment.
Well, you can divide it, or do you want to...
I could just move to delete lines 2.8 and 2.9 from the amendment, okay. 855.
That might be a simpler amendment. Okay. We have the amendment before us to delete lines 2.8, 2.9.
Jeff, could I just ask research staff to just read those lines so we're
sure.
Clear on this?
Representative Noba or Mr. Metz. It's been a long day. Miss Noba.
Mr. Chair, the lines read page 52, line 10, strike everything after B, the letter B, and page 52, line 11, delete the new language and strike the existing language.
Okay. More clarification, Representative Wendell. Okay. Representative Mariani.
Yes, Chair, very briefly again, I would oppose the amendments to the arguments that I made earlier.
Okay. All those in favor of the Demmer amendment to strike lines 2.8 and 2.9 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment does not prevail. Okay. Representative Holder.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, this boiler operator training, you are using staff development money for that purpose. When I look at the base language this is going into, it's pretty prescriptive in that this money can only be used to for members of site-based teams training to enhance team performance and activities associated with professional teacher compensation models. Are boiler operators part of the site-based team?
Representative Driving, or who would like to answer the question?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, different schools have different people on the team, but they can certainly have non-traditional employees as well as teachers and parents on the teams. It's up to the local school to decide how they're going to do it. We did just put in some language as well for Representative Ember, where he wanted to do CPR type training, and that, did we put that in or not? Yeah, we did. And yeah. So, you know, we have, because schools are so short of funding, that anything that we give them in the way of a new mandate, they want some money for it. You know, it used to be you could just, for things that have minuscule costs, like this one that's debatable, even if there is a new cost, they're just so so skittish about anything that will cost money when they have so little. And so we are left with this sort of proposal needing to find a funding source and not just come out of the general fund that schools get for the per pupil formula. And hence, this is what Representative Mahoney and the MSBA worked out. And if we're going to have a specific place other than just with the per pupil formula, this is the best one.
So,
Representative Holbrook. Mr. Chair, was this a separate bill in committee that was heard? I mean, it seems like a real policy thing. While it's saying how you can spend a particular pot of money, it really has nothing to do with a fiscal note. It's basically taking teacher development money for boiler operator training, which seems like kind of a stretch. When I read the base language and how we want to make teams and go with teacher performance, et cetera, I'm assuming the boiler operators are not teachers. And so, again, Mr. Chair, I'm going to move to delete lines 1.2 and 1.3 out of the amendment. It's really not a fiscal issue. I don't think the Ways and Means Committee should be adding boiler operators to using teacher development money. Hopefully that would have been settled in the committee.
I do think it is fiscal in how they spend their money. So, I would also just say that I would think that non-teachers would also be trained under the new language that's in the bill itself for automatic external defibrillators. So janitors are going to be trained on that as well.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert said it's best that this is money for out of the staff development money. So it is a money issue. We did hear this bill in Takeoff Finance. We heard it, and it was an informational hearing because the parties involved had not yet worked out an agreement. And so we wanted to get the issue before the Finance Committee. Anytime we're looking at uses for the staff development dollars, that clearly comes to Takeoff Finance. And then once there are allowable uses within that fund, the school site team still chooses how they want to spend the money. So they wouldn't have to choose this if they didn't wish to. And Representative Mahoney looks like trying to enter the discussion as well.
Representative Mahoney, speaking
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg again, this is heard in my committee. It was heard in Representative Rukavina's committee. There's a separate bill that I have to read it. I think it's 8 hours per year, and 2 hours of required training shall occur in the boiler room. So it's asking for 8 hours of training, which they're supposed to have training. The custodial staff is supposed to have training on how to use the boilers to set the temperature, set thermostats, and work some of the control systems. Three groups have said there is no cost to this. the boiler inspectors have volunteered to incorporate it into their workload from the state. The chief boiler operator is required to do staff training to maintain their boiler license. The custodial staff says they're in the boiler room, they're doing training anyhow. This would be incorporated into their current training. The school board say, well, there might be a cost. We're not sure where it is, but we think it might be in there. And if you're going to make us do this, we need to have some way to pay it. So three people say, no, this should not come to a cost. The school boards haven't been able to show me where it's going to cost. But I am just allowing them this option if they need it to take a few dollars out. I don't think they're going to. And one of the things I've told the school boards is that they need to track that if they're going to come up with costs, because I want to see it next year. And I want to see from the custodial staff where they can prove to me that it doesn't cost after a year. And if there's some cost in this thing, there'll be a long discussion here at the Capitol on it. But right now, I don't expect it to cost anything. I expect the savings to come from the custodial staff controlling the heating and cooling in the buildings a whole lot more than they can right now. So I think this does have a cost to it.
My issue is not training boiler operators.
No, they're training custodians.
Just a second. Representative Holbrook has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I recognize it's the custodians in the building, but if you look at where you're putting this language, in effective staff development activities, I mean, it just doesn't...
Well, Representative Holbrook, I want to call your attention to 3.22 as well. It says staff development activities may include... and then it goes through the activities. And we are adding some additional things as well that may be funded from them, such as basic first aid, which I'm sure is more than just teachers, focusing on certification for CPR, use of automatic external defibrillators, which I hope is trained more than just teachers, so that if someone has a heart difficulty in the school, then the janitor doesn't have to find something else.
And Mr. Chair, I understand that, but you and I are debating a policy issue in a ways and means.
Well,
whether or not boiler operators should use teacher development money, it really doesn't change the amount of teacher development money available to the district.
It doesn't have a fiscal note. Let me just correct you. It's not teacher development, it's staff development. Mm. Okay. Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, a couple things. You know, when I was on the school board, we had our custodians who had their boiler license, and I think those who had boiler license were paid more, because that's a skill, and you have to have training in boilers to have a boiler's license. And when we made changes to our boilers, and sometimes we worked with Johnson Controls to do some things, they had training on how to use those, and they had resources to call. It wasn't like we threw our janitors on it and said, well, I hope you can figure out how to run this thing. You know, we didn't do that, Mr. Chair, and I hope other school districts don't do that. So I question Representative Mahoney saying that they don't know what to do with these newfangled controls and that sort of thing. They do have training. They do have that. But beyond that, Mr. Chair, you know, as reading through this, and you're right, down on 3.2, staff development activities may include. However, on 3.7 and 3.8, it says staff development activities must is the word. And there are seven things lined up. Every single one of those, save one, say teachers. And the one that doesn't, it says align, provide opportunities to build professional relationships, that's the teacher. The teacher also, align with state and local academic standards. Number one, focus on school, classroom, and research-based strategies improving student learning. Boiler activities doesn't satisfy that, Mr. Chair. Okay. Number two, provide opportunities for teachers to practice and improve instructional skills over time. That's not boiler operators. Number three, provide opportunities for teachers to use student data as part of their daily work to increase achievement. That's not boilers. Number four, enhance teacher content knowledge and instructional skills. That's not boiler operations. Number five, align with state and local academic standards. We don't have standards for boiler operations, so that doesn't line up. Number six, provide opportunities to build professional relationships, foster collaboration among principals and staff who provide instruction, and provide opportunities for teacher-to-teacher mentoring. That's not boiler operations. And the last one, number 7, align with the plan of the district or site for alternative teacher professional pay system. That, Mr. Chair, is not boiler operator. So unless we make some more changes in terms of what staff development activities must be, we have some nonsensical things here. We're saying it may include something down below when up above it says it must have these features.
Well,
so, Mr. Chair, it doesn't really work.
Mr. Representative Demmer, you always want to read things in its entirety. And you say it must include these things, and then it may include these other things. And I think what we're saying is that this is not a must, that they must use the boiler, staff development for boilers, but if the district may include it in their training as well. And I would also, you know, I spent quite a few years in the classroom, and I know for a fact when that unit that heated the room for me was noisy and irritating as heck, and I would call I don't know if it was the boiler maker or the janitor would come up and adjust the thermostat because I couldn't adjust it right, and that it helped my learning in the classroom when the classroom became quieter and more comfortable as well. So I do think it is FISCA already. Now, whether or not we want to include it is something different, and I think we've kind of, I'd like to get to a vote on your amendment.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I would just add on one last thing. I guess, quite frankly, putting this in really opens up my imagination for further amendments to this particular type of thing. We're opening up staff development activities to a whole new realm of possibilities in the realm of education, and it'll be interesting next year in education committees as to what we try to do with these staff development dollars. And I will add one other thing. Quite frankly, they do have the capability right now, without this language, to allocate these dollars for anything they want. If the teachers and the administration decide together to release some of these staff development dollars, they can do that right now. But like I said, we're going down a different path here by opening up these dollars for lots of different uses, and my imagination is already starting to go.
I'm sure you have a good imagination. I'd like to get to, we do have an amendment before us. We do have Representative Flails.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much, and I really appreciate what Representative Demmer is saying. And for me, it's not a huge issue if we're just thinking about what is this provision relevant to. And it's not relevant to teaching, obviously, and I think you made that point very, very well. However, on page 147 of the bill, under facility plan, this seems to me like a more logical place to insert this sort of an amendment. It talks about the health and safety revenue. It talks about, you know, projects and so forth. And it seems to me that if we're going to be talking about facilities and training of maintaining our facilities, I think that we need to look for a place that might be more relevant. I am not convinced that this perhaps is the best passage for that. But if we could perhaps go ahead and, with the author's permission, perhaps we could go ahead and delete those two lines. I'm just making a recommendation with the understanding that staff will look for the logical place to insert that training provision. I think a lot of us would feel better about the relevance.
Is there a reaction to that, Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Health and safety revenue is a levy, so there would be a fiscal note to put into that section.
So that means that there would be additional levy for this training?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And that was in the current levy. Is there a cap on the levy?
So, Mr. Chair, every time there is a new use for this levy, then the department calculates about what that would be, and we get a fiscal note because it's not a choice where they get a cap. There is no cap, and so if they have a certain amount that they can levy for, and then they get yet another use for it, they can levy some more, and that then garners a fiscal note.
Representative Holbert.
Given the testimony by Representative Mahoney, he doesn't think it's going to cost anything.
Well, I wonder if we could have this. Could we get some clarification on this issue from the School Board Association? Would that help? somebody that would represent the school board. My understanding was is that this was comfort language for the school boards association. And I don't know if it's welcome to the committee if you can identify yourself for the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. The language that you're speaking to tonight from Representative Mahoney, this has been a pressing issue that he has really worked on diligently through this session. This is an item we feel that would have cost attached to it. And as we brought to the legislature some ideas for mandate reform, we tried to limit how many mandates you'd ask school districts to do. And the way to make this one assured to provide this training across the state is to make it an allowable staff development activity. And the difference between the teacher's portion and the staff development, it doesn't say teacher's development, but staff development. It seemed to fit under our 2% set aside already in law. CPR training is similar. There's a lot of staff, custodians, as well as food service workers who could be trained on the CPR activities. It's somewhat the same piece going forward, and it just allows us to spend that money for this purpose at the local level.
Any other questions on that? Representative Westrom, thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess to the author of the amendment or Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr.
Why are we even horsing around with more mandates from the state level on how they spend their money? Why don't we just let the school districts spend it? The boiler operators already have to have a license to even be to even operate them before they even start in that job. What's the drive for this?
Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Weston, this is not a mandate. As you heard, staff development is dollars are spent and decided upon as to how they're going to spend them. So if Representative Mahoney is right and there is no cost, then this will be a neutral and there will be nothing to decide. If Ms. Kelleher is right and there is a cost, then at least they have some funding source where they can go to spend this. And as we had testimony in our committee, it's very important for these boilers to have operators who are trained. And many of these staff apparently came on board before they needed this information in their licensure, and we really... these are dangerous machines, we learned in our committee, and we want people who are operating them to know what they are doing. It involves safety of, you know, if it weren't for the levy cost, health and safety perhaps is a place to consider for this, but we just don't happen to have a levy target in our committee. But it fits under the staff development, so we were satisfied that it could go here. But it's not a mandate because there have to be decisions on how the staff development dollars are spent, and this is an allowable use to choose from.
Okay, we have Representative McNamara, then I'm going to try to get to a vote on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, I think, and I think my questions for you are for Representative Mariani, I think, who moved the amendment. By putting in boiler operators on line 3.24, I'm assuming what you want to do then is allow any and everybody. It could be pesticide applicators that need to get certified for putting out pesticides on the grounds of the schools, or power limited technicians who need to be licensed to work on the irrigation or the outdoor lighting, plumbers in their licensing, electricians, cooks. There's certification for cooks so that they're not serving the students food that's not to the right temperature and stuff. I think the argument that you're using for the boiler operators would be used for all of those, and I'm assuming that's the thought here, to give the school boards more local control and let them spend the staff development money however they want. Is that the idea?
Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the only bill that we had of this nature before us, so we didn't think further down that road. I think that it's not illogical to think that those other uses could be considered. Whether the committee would find them as compelling as the arguments that we heard about the important for the boilers to be operated by properly trained people. I'm not so sure that those others would find such a welcome hearing, but we haven't heard those bills.
Can I ask a question? Then we'll go to a vote. And that is, the question was at one time there was a, if there is a cost, there's a question whether or not it's a cost. Will we have some kind of a report somewhere in the legislative process in the future that this actually cost some money or was just an argument between some people? Will we have a proof of that at the end? Representative Grady, who's their tracking
of it? I think that's a very good idea, and we should get some feedback and have that at least in the case law finance committee, and we could share it with this committee
I want you to determine whether or not there's an actual cost when people say there is or isn't. Is there a mechanism of tracking that?
Mr. Chair, the School Board Association is here, and I think they heard the question, and I think it's a good suggestion, and we'll ask for feedback on that.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
With that, I would like to then get to a vote. The motion before us to delete lines 1.2 and 1.3 of the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. And we have any other discussion on the amendment itself? Amendment has been changed. Yes, Representative Westrom.
Well, just in generally, as we talk about the staff development, Representative Greiling, are we doing anything to get rid of the requirement and let the locals decide? I mean, if the school district has to put money towards training somebody to learn how to use their boiler, it seems like that's a local decision they would make. Well, I don't know why we're horsing around with that. And where I'm going with this discussion, Mr. Chair, this seems to be the opportunity, but I couldn't believe it. This past weekend, visiting with a local cook in one of our schools, they've got a new test. They just had an inspection from the health department, the local inspector last week, Representative Greiling. And believe it or not, now they have to start reporting when they have diarrhea. Now, this is the path we're going down. They literally were told by the inspector, you've got to tell us when you've got diarrhea in the kitchen and you can't come in for 72 hours, because if you've got diarrhea, we want to be able to track if it came from the kitchen to go through this kid. Now, this is seriously ridiculous. If what happens when we sit and talk about prescribing stuff from the state. But I am absolutely stunned of how stupid our bureaucracies could come up with, and it probably is let out of bills like this. And so I share this with you in seriousness, that let's get away from this trend rather than come up with more dumb things for inspectors to have jobs to go around and tell the director of the head cook came out of the office after meeting with him and said, well, guess what we have to do now? Start keeping track of when you got diarrhea. Now,
Mr. West, is it of the oral diarrhea?
Well, you'll appreciate this, and I'm not going to divulge what school district this came from, but their self-decided implemented policy is to follow Bill Clinton, don't ask, don't tell. But I mean, it's a serious matter. We got inspectors out there coming, enforcing this, and apparently a law somewhere, Representative Greiling, but can you imagine to waste anybody's time to keep a chart of who's got diarrhea in the kitchen?
We do have the amendment before us. All those in favor of the amendment to A55, as it was changed, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried. Okay, Representative Faust, there's a bill amendment that you have. Do you want to give that amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment 8-0002A56.
Representative Faust makes that motion. Representative Faust, do you want to explain your amendment?
I would be delighted to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this amendment does is it reduces the amount of of funding that the authorizers will take out of the charter schools. It started out at $10 per student after the first 3 years. The first 3 years it was $30, and after that it was $10 per student. And the work that Representative Slocum did, along with the authorizers and charter schools, raised that to, I believe, about $75, which I thought was too significant an increase. So I sat down with both of them and came up with some new language that reduced that down to $50 per student. Then once the new Minnesota Miracle Tick kicks in, then it goes to 1% of that. And there's also limits on a per school basis how much they can take out. So that's what it does.
Does everyone understand what the amendment is? Any discussion on the amendment? Not. The Representative Faulks renews his motion to A56th Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Other amendments? That's the only two that I have. Any other amendments before? Representative Westrom, I need to apologize to you for my statement. I know you were very serious.
You're absolutely right. My comments were out of order. No problem.
If not, then we have a House File 2 as amended before us. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 2 as amended be recommended to pass and placed on the general
agenda. All those in favor of the amendment? Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dreiling, we heard from Mr. Marks last week that when you take the general fund spending biennium to biennium, we saw a 5% increase in spending. And from what I understand, you got zero of that new money as a result of the tax increases. And many of us at this table have been involved in setting targets and the discussions that occur in caucuses. And we've certainly heard from your caucus how important education is. And I'm just wondering, can you tell me in the process of setting budget targets for K-12 with a 5% increase in overall spending as a result of tax increases, how K-12 ended up with zero increases? I'm wondering if you lost the arm wrestling match, or it just seems that if in fact we are increasing spending in so many other areas, why can't there be additional spending in K-12?
Representative Holt, Representative Grading.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg. I felt like when we set our targets, we won the arm wrestling contest. We had a lot of discussion, and we were very proud that early childhood, K-12, and higher ed all ended up with the steady funding rather than being cut at all. This is a year when we have such a huge deficit that the tax increases that are being proposed by our caucus are going into the deficit. You know, we have, if you count inflation on both sides of the ledger, a $7.5 billion budget deficit. So no area of the budget got an increase. Education came out on top clearly by having no cut at all. And, you know, the reason that the tax increase had to go into the deficit is because we have a balanced budget. You know, I don't like the shifts that are in there. I can argue, I'm going to agree with anybody that wants to complain about the shifts in our bill. But I don't complain about the fact that the budget is balanced. You know, when you look at, for instance, the governor's budget, and there's a $2.5 billion deficit in the next biennium, not counting inflation on both sides of the ledger, which I think you kind of have to count it on both sides if you're not going to have some sort of Enron and accounting. And I just think that was a mistake that we made, and I bet you do too, that when we count it on one side and not the other. Another solution would be to take it away on both sides, and that would be more honest than counting it on the revenue side but not the spending side. So we won in our arm wrestling after lots of blood and fur on the floor in our caucus. And, you know, we wrestled around for a few days before we came to this great victory. But the Achilles heel was, and I don't disagree with that, and I bet you don't disagree with that either, is that we balanced the budget for the 4 years and not just for two.
Okay, so and Representative Holbrook, follow
you.
Up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Chair Gravingle, you know, I think that some of us are, you know, just wondering where the priorities are, and the governor was able to at least put more money. You can argue some of his other things, but at least there was more money in K-12. On another note, was there any testimony what the shift will cost districts across the state in interest costs for the borrowing when we withhold the 27% for the shift? I mean, there's got to be some cost. I've heard just from one school district that I represent what it is. Was there any... Do you have any statewide figure for how much interest the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota are going to pay?
I'm going to let Representative Carlson try to answer that question. Representative Carlson?
Yeah. Chairman, a couple of points that Representative Holbrook has made can paint the big picture. We talked about increased spending and what have you. Cut the House of $1.6 billion. The governor is 1.5, so we actually cut more than the governor.
Would you bring your mic down, Mr.
I'll start over again. When we talk about cuts, the House is cutting $1.6 billion. I just haven't had these numbers, by the way, because we had the same discussion in taxes a few moments ago. The governor cuts $1.5 billion, so we actually cut more than the governor. When you talk about shifts and transfers, we're at $1.8 billion total shifts. The governor is at $2.6 billion when you talk shifts and transfers. One of the differences there, I think we're $1.5 billion K-12 shifts. The governor's $1.5 billion K-12 shifts. We're $1.7 billion. But the governor does transfer large sums of money out of the Health Care Access Fund, if you'll recall. That's the difference between... For the biggest difference between the 1.8 and the 2.6. On the revenue side, downstairs in taxes, tonight we're talking about an increase in revenue of $1.5 billion. The governor, with his appropriations bonds, is at $1 billion. So when you look at the total difference, we're at $4.9 billion. The governor's at $5.1 billion. So we're, quite frankly, relatively... close. We're a little higher on the cuts. We're a little higher on the revenue. But when you take the total package, it's relatively close. When you talk about the shift and the school districts, when we looked at the reserves the school districts had for the past 3 years, and they report every June 30th with their UFARS report, they were over $900 million in reserves last June 30th. And when you go back 3 years, that number was relatively constant and, quite frankly, growing. But what Representative Greiling has in her bill is, if I recall correctly, $40 million that's available, the way we put it together, for those school districts that would not have the reserves to cover their cash flow needs or their costs. So we've covered that. Now, that they would have to pay back, but that's built into the overall numbers. When you folks were in charge in 03, you put aside, if you will, $25 million for that purpose. And so we're at 40, but things are a little more expensive here a few years later. Now, when I mentioned the school district reserves, that's a good thing. I mean, I support them having reserves. But we are in an emergency situation, and many of the school districts can draw those down. I think there's four school districts that have negative numbers, and so they obviously would draw on that. There are some school districts, when you measure it on a per-student basis, where it's relatively low. Robbinsdale, the one I represent, was at about $150. Believe it or not, we have a few school districts, mainly small ones, that, according to the last UFARS report, were at $12,000. Per student. So is a shift the best way to go? I would say probably not, but it's something that both Democrats and Republicans in emergency situations have used. It's under the same law that you had, going to be paid back as soon as we reestablish the reserve fund, then we begin to pay back the shift as well. So
that's basically the background of it, and I, along with some others, put quite a bit of work into putting these numbers together so we would, in fact, have a balanced budget. And as Representative Greiland points out, we did have a lot of discussion on whether or not to use the shift, but it would have meant even further cuts or a real stretch for the tax committee to make up the difference. If you assume, and I have yet to talk to anyone, although I haven't talked to any of you yet, that are endorsing putting the state into debt with revenue bonds for $1 billion, you know, using one credit card, if you will, to pay off another credit card, and that would cost us, over the life of those bonds, $1.6 billion. So those are some of the things to kind of consider if you want to be somewhat critical of the shift, a smaller shift than the governor, but one I think that's necessary to move us forward.
There's a little bit of clarification on the interest question there. And maybe Mr. Mark can clarify that, because I think that your question was on interest, right?
My question was, is the cost of interest across the states for short-term borrowing in order to cash flow?
Let Mr. Mark clarify that.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure of the answer to that question. The mechanism in the bill is actually advancing payments or not going to a 27% shift for those districts in statutory operating debt. So there's no interest payment on that. It's the state advances payments to certain districts that are in statutory operating debt or have negative balances. I don't know if there's an estimate on cash flow borrowing that might be needed for other districts or not.
All right. Representative
Mr. Chair, I just, you know, Representative Carlson, I appreciate the information about the various plans, and I think everybody would agree the House is much closer to the governor than the Senate. If to anybody, but it's also a matter of priorities, and we sat last week and listened to how the budget's being proposed. There's going to be $1 million in spending to teach people how to compost, but not $1 million more for kids in education. So it also comes down to priorities, and I guess we've determined that it's more important to spend $1 million on teaching people how to compost than to give $1 million to kids in the school. So, I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that you have so much money to work with. I understand that. But where you put the money and how you spend it is also discretionary.
I don't think that was from the general fund. Yes. Representative McNamara, or I'm sorry, Representative Demmer, and then Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I won't, I agree with Representative Fulberg in some of her comments, but I won't go there right now. My comments are about the tails. And I know, Representative Greiling, I know the kind of work you put. I know this is not what you wanted to end up with. I know that. I mean, we worked on this, and I was with you, and I listened every day for the last number of months. But it is what it is. And this is a very difficult thing to support, and the reason for that is, as we know from the testimony, the shifts are better than the straight cuts. At least that's what the school told us, and I agree with that. It's a timing issue is what it is, as opposed to cash. However, we still are looking between the shifts for the aid from the state and the tax recognition shift. Over the 2 years, it got about $1.5 billion over the two biennials. And on top of that, we have Article 9, House File Number 2, or Article 9 of this, which is, as you've termed it, the new Minnesota Miracle Whip kind of guideline. And net of some of the property tax relief in there, I think the cost on that in today's dollars is about $1.8 billion, with a B. And that's out in 2014. Members, assuming we want to get back to 90-10 with our funding, and assuming 2014 comes, we have $3.5 billion that will have to be made up to cover education. That's to cover the funding for the Article 9 that's in here, and it's also to pay back the shift. We're pushing $4 billion just for K-12. Now, I would submit that if you want to talk about Enron accounting, this is king of the hill. Because we're talking about, and we can debate whether we should do this or not, but we're putting it in, and what it's going to be set up like, we could increase funding to education by $1 billion, and we'd be cutting proposed education spending. That's what we're setting ourselves up for. Now, whether that's known or whether it's just kind of a consequence of having to get this in, the fact remains to pay back the shift and to fund Article 9, we're going to be pushing $4 billion just for K-12 education all by itself increase. Now, I would submit that that is not good fiscal policy. And that's with all due respect, Representative Grabbing. I know where your heart is. I know that's not what you wanted to end up with. But it is what we have. And I just don't think it's a good idea.
I can't. Representative Rukavina isn't here, but it kind of sounds like the 1998 tax bill that was proposed. So Representative Kahn and then Representative Bunn. Are you on the list?
I was going to make the same comment that you made, I think, about the composting, that it wasn't from the general fund.
Representative Bunn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've made this comment in other forms before, but not with the folks from the education, Board of Education and their lobbyists here. So I wanted to make it now. In relation to the shift that's going on here, we were talking about a shift of approximately $1.7 billion, I believe, if I remember correctly, and we were talking about current reserves being $900 million, and then a fund for those in deep trouble in terms of borrowing $42 million. My concern is, given the very unusual nature of the capital markets right now, that we're talking here about schools having to try to short-term borrow $800 million possibly and all hitting the market in about the same time. So given what we're hearing about the commercial market, rates of 17-18% to find anything to lend or borrow in the commercial market in some instances, I'm just concerned that going forward we need to hear more information from financial experts and from the schools as to the feasibility of doing this. I appreciate the importance. The arguments have been made about this being preferred to some other options, either more cuts or more tax increases, but I am just concerned that in this current climate that this may not be a doable type of shift. Secondly, related to that is we did fairly well in the last round of paying back those shifts even more quickly than some financial experts thought the state would. But in this round, given what's in the statute about reserves and when shifts are paid back, I would not expect you to see any of this paid back in more than at least in the next 6 years, because we would have to completely replenish $650 million of reserves first before you saw a penny. So this is not going to be that short term, in my view, unless we change something else. And so just in the future going forward here, I hope that we can do this with more information in front of us. That's just a comment.
Okay, we have the... any other discussion on
this? Mr. Chair, roll call, please.
Roll call has been requested on the bill. Let's see. Representative Mariani, would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to House File 2 as amended be recommended to pass and placed on the general ledger.
The roll call has been requested. The...
Mr. Chair, Representative Garling, I just want to thank you for the hard work you put into this K-12 bill. We all know that these are times that Minnesota has not seen before. The budget deficit is larger. We heard in the tax committee than any other time in Minnesota history. And so the question in the tax committee was asked, had we ever seen this large of a shift? And the nonpartisan staff said no. And then we asked if they had ever seen such a large deficit, and they also said no. So given the current financial situation of the state, I think that you've done an incredible job putting together a K-12 bill that I will be voting for. I wish there was more money, but I will be supporting you.
Thank you very much.
I failed to call on one person that was on the list here at the top. Representative Falls for an MP.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well. Very quick question. The governor proposed changing the Purpose School to a charter school, and when I look at the spreadsheet, it looks like you have not proposed that, and I just want to make sure that that is the situation, that you are not proposing the Purpose School becoming a charter school.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Fauch. No, we did not do that, but as I said in the Finance Committee, I think the governor, with his proposal, did start a discussion.
We didn't make changes at this time, but the Burkitt School has a board chair that's interested in having the discussion. They're bringing back Dave Flannery, who used to be their executive director, and they are going to put their creative selves to this problem in the over the interim and come back with recommendations, because things have changed since the school first started, and they were the only school, so hence they were an agency. Charter schools had not been yet proposed, and also the housing that they have for their students was only for that one arts high school, and now there are more. And so all of those things, and how to be more equitable to the greater Minnesota students who come here, they are going to discuss, but we thought it was premature to go ahead. I think the governor put forward his proposal in a pretty slapdash happy way, and no one had heard of it or discussed it, but it did trigger discussions that we will have in the interim. Thanks for asking that question.
Okay, we have the motion by Representative Mariani before us. House File 2, we recommend to pass as amended to the general registry. Roll call requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Solberg?
Yes.
Abler? Reinert?
Yes.
Bunn? Carlson?
Aye.
Davis?
No.
Dean? Gemmer?
No.
Eakin?
Yes.
Faust?
Yes.
Hamilton? Hillstrom?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Hoppy?
No.
Huntley? Kahn?
Yes.
Lenchevsky? Mahoney?
Yes.
Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
Otremba?
Yes.
Rude? Scalzi?
Yes.
Swales?
Yes.
Tilbury?
Yes.
Westrom?
No.
Bunn?
Abler?
Dean? Hamilton? Lenchevsky?
Aye.
Huntley?
Yeah.
There being 17 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails. We then have with us Representative, the non-controversial bill, Representative Cox. This will be the last one this evening. Again, if others came in late, the economic development bill will not be considered tonight. We'll be doing that on Wednesday.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative, yes.
While you're waiting for Representative Kahn, Mr. Marks reminded me of something. At one point we talked about the $40 million, but he indicated that the mechanism is a little different, and maybe he could quickly explain that on that reserve for the school districts that might not have the cash flow.
If it's okay with members, we would, Mr. Marks, can you just clarify that?
I did misspeak on the amount, and it's based on what was actually needed. Now it's a much lower number.
Mr. Mark?
Mr. Chair, members, on the House File 2 on the K-12 education bill, the mechanism, if anybody wanted to look it up, is in Section 13 of Article 5, and it's described on page 31 of the bill summary. But for those districts in statutory operating debt, that is, those districts where their debt exceeds a certain amount, they are not shifted to the 70 3/27 payment schedule, they're left at 90/10, and the cost of that is $7.5 million, which is covered in the bill.
Thank you for that clarification. Okay, Representative Kahn, would you like to make a motion?
Yes. I move that Senate File 2082 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. I understand that's before us, even though we didn't copy it.
That's right. Members, we have the Senate file that was passed today, sent to Ways and Means. We didn't bother copying that. That's okay. Save some trees. Then we have the next amendment, would be Representative Kahn, for you to move the language in House File 1781.
I'm going to delete the Senate language and insert the language from House File 1781.
We have that before us. It's a standard motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Kahn, you were given a target for your committee.
Yes, we met it to the penny.
And we have a spreadsheet. Would you like to...
There's a technical amendment that takes out some sections that got in when they didn't belong in the bill. Maybe we could... Do you want to take that now? Or
Whichever you desire.
I guess we can take it now.
Okay. And you want to move the 829 amendment?
829 amendment. I don't understand how they got in, but they don't belong in.
Okay, Representative Kahn moves the amendment H1781A29. Representative Kahn, you said it's technical. It's taking out some sections that are not in the bill. Is that correct?
Yes. They're in somewhere else, I believe. Staff will tell you better.
Ms. Novak?
These sections should have been moved in out of this bill in finance and into the economic development bill in the finance committee, and they were just inadvertently left in the state government.
So just Ms. Novak, then when the economic development is before us, we'll put these back in that bill. Okay.
The language there.
Okay, so everyone understand the technical amendment that's before us? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Okay. Representative Kahn, do you want to give the highlights of your fiscal bill?
Yes. Okay. The total net general fund spending is $579.2 million, which includes $628.8 million expenditures authorized in the bill, $33.1 million in new general fund revenues, including $30.1 million from expanded compliance initiatives at the Department of Revenue. There are $16.5 million general reduction across state agencies from reductions in managerial positions, deputy commissioners, assistant commissioners, and others. So the total net funding for all funds is $66.1 million. In addition to the general fund, this includes $14.7 million from the Workers' Compensation Fund for the Office of Administrative Hearings and $7.9 million from the Special Revenue Fund for the Gambling Control Board and the Racing Commission. To go over the summary of some of them, and, you know, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll go into as much detail as people want. Let me try a summary first, and then we'll see what kind of questions we have. The total for the legislature is $134 million. That's a 3% cut to the House and the LCC, and a 5% cut to the Senate. Constitutional offices, the total general fund money is $86.2 million. There's a 14.7% increase to the governor, and that's the net impact of the 5% operating reduction that the governor asked for, but a $1.5 million increase to cover the policy staff and the D.C. office, which have now been moved into the governor's office. There's a 3.4% decrease, $1.6 million for the Attorney General, 3.7% one-time increase, $680,000 to the state auditor for federal stimulus auditing, and for the auditor, the costs are recovered really through billings. There's a 5% reduction, $616,000 to the Secretary of State. In the Department of Administration, there's a $39.4 million total general fund, and that's a 29
million net increase for the biennium. I'm sorry, 29,000 net increase for the biennium. Changes include 1 million increase in lieu of rent, 250,000 for the Office of Grant Management, but that amount will be offset by charges against the grant. We eliminated funding for local planning assistance, that's $500,000, and there's a $1.25 million in operating reductions, which is spread across all the agency activities. For finance, total budget of $49.5 million, that's an $8.4 million increase for the biennium. And these changes include a $2.1 million operating budget reduction, $500,000 one-time funding for federal stimulus oversight, $1 million increase for improved financial oversight, and then the issue, then the governor had three really important, and I actually tried to fund all of them, but ran into some roadblocks. The governor had three really important information policy issues. Over $17 million for the map replacement with a lease purchase. This is the Minnesota Accounting and Procurement System. We had a chunk of money also to continue the integrated tax system and revenue, which we'll get to later. And he also had really wanted to start about $16 million for planning for the starting the construction of a centralized data system. There have been a whole bunch of reports from various places that says that Minnesota desperately needs a new centralized data system for security issues, for the control of information technology, and just for not redoing all of the expenses in each of the separate siloed data centers. Getting away from those silos would be a tremendous effect. And we just weren't. My personal opinion, well, that's what I think it's agreed with many of the people and always speak to, is that the best way to do this is by bonding, because the interesting thing is, even though information systems have the same kind of lifetime as many of our buildings do, 20 to 30 years, we're not allowed to, by bond council's interpretation, we're not allowed to bond for them. We're not allowed to use general GO bonding to pay for them. Although other states, like the state of Massachusetts, does. When I asked the CIO from Massachusetts how their constitution let them do it, he sort of gave me the sneery look, and his answer was, our constitution was written by John Adams, and it's just perfect. So, by John Adams, and it's just perfect. So, I still don't quite understand what the difference is between our constitutions, but the interesting thing is, if we do bond for a data center, every information system that goes into that data system can be bonded for. Only the first time. You can't replace them and do it. So, but we didn't get that into the bonding bill from either the governor or from the House Capital Investment or from the Senate Capital Investment Committee. So we've gone in two directions by both me and Representative Downey. In the Office of Enterprise Technology, we've put in about 250,000 to start doing the planning, so hopefully we'll be ready for the next bonding bill. And while that's going on, Representative Downing has put in a clause that makes us, before we decide to do that bonding, although some of that has done, is that we're looking at all of the possible alternatives, including outsourcing and so forth. So the changes, the changes in finance are $2.1 million, but operating budget, budget reduction, $500,000 one-time funding for federal stimulus oversight,
$1 million increase to include financial oversight, and it was a common theme throughout all of our hearings, starting with some of the legislative audited fundings, that we do need improved internal financial auditing. We need improved looking over of some of the issues. That's also reflected by some of the language in the bill, language that was worked on again by Representative Winslet and by Representative Downey. We have $8.96 million for MAPS replacement. This is a lease purchase, and that unfortunately is delayed a year because of the unacceptance of some of the chair's ways of funding that. And so that will have to, and so again, at least we'll one up on the Senate because they have no funding for MAPS in their, in the Senate bill. Then, as I said, $250,000 for pre-design of a consolidated data center. Oh, actually, that's not from the general fund. That's from special revenue. That's in the Office of Economic Enterprise, generally information-based expenses. The Office of Enterprise Technology, they have $11.5 million, that's $606,000 reduction to planning and management activities. $11.7 million from occupational and commercial licenses to continue the electronic licensing system. That's about halfway, and it's something that you may have heard from originally from the realtors, now from social workers, and from nurses who claim that they have their own system that's working perfectly well and they should be allowed to have their own system. Again, the OEP people say that their systems do not fit in with the idea of an electronic one-stop-shopping system. And we have put some language in that says the priority goes to the systems that haven't been recently replaced in terms of how we're going to do those systems. Department of Revenue, $249.6 million, $8.3 million cut to non-compliance activities, $7.5 million in new funding for compliance initiatives, and that brings money in to the state system on a 4-to-1 basis. And so then we have $4.2 million to finish the integrated tax system through lease purchase. In the campaign finance board, we have $1.4 million operating. There's a 1.8% increase, and that's net of reduction to the direct operating budget, but we offset that by a redirection of $100,000 from the public subsidy appropriation. The CAP board has $708,000, it's a 5% reduction. And then we have things which got transferred to this bill, so I hope I don't have to answer any questions about them. They came from these ones came. We have from the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. We have $540,000 total general fund. It's $100,000 for the partial base restoration. The Target Center appropriation, I think this is supposed to be the last year for it, is repealed, and that's the savings of $1.5 million. That went from the Amateur Sports Commission to the City of Minneapolis. Minority Councils, Black Minnesotans, Chicano, Latino, Asian Pacific, Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and $2.8 million, 5% operating budget reductions, and that's $64,000 to the Indian Affairs Council for burial sites and unfunded federal mandates. The contingent account is down from the governor's amount. Governor asked for $5 million in the contingent account. We have $2.3 million, which includes $1.76 million in one-time funds for federal stimulus match contingency, you know, in case it's something that we haven't quite heard of. So there's then a general reduction of $16.5 million, where the governor is required to reduce the number of deputy and assistant commissioners and unclassified employees to generate the general fund savings. There are pension aids carried in this bill. $4.75 million for retired legislators and the Constitutional Officers Plan. The
Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund, MERF, is a continuing appropriation of $9 million each year of the biennium. First Class Teachers Aid is $30.9 million for TRA, $5.7 million for St. Paul teachers, and $692,000 for Duluth teachers. The significant revenue changes is their new compliance initiative funded at $7.5 million, projected to bring in $30.1 million in new revenues. The net gain of $22.6 million, a 4-to-1 ratio. For all agencies, there's a $2 million revenue gain by delaying the impact of the land sales provisions from the 205 state government bill. That's because agencies have been unable to meet the goal that was set in that bill, $6.4 million, and this provision allows another 2 years to meet that goal. So it's an offsetting cost of $2 million in fiscal year 09. That's the general financial part of the bill. There are some language, there's some other bills that are tucked into this bill and some language provisions in some policy provisions, which again have been, have had some discussion at various times in the process. The administration is allowed to sell naming rights to state buildings other than the Capitol, the Judiciary, and this building. The administration is allowed to sell advertising on fencing adjacent to state contracts. We eliminated the state funding for the lieutenant governor's car. We repealed the statutory definition of a tax and a fee. We prohibited finance, MMB. We kept it, made him keep the name finance, which everyone seems to understand. We prohibited laws named after, this follows the federal policy, we prohibited laws named after living people, which eliminated statutory references to Lesage, Tennyson, and Douglas J. Johnson. I pointed out to people that this was a whole set of male Democratic senators. And if it's a good idea, there ought to be a little balance to it. Okay?
Can we think of something to name the con?
No, not you have to kill me first. It's a challenge.
Well, I was going down that road.
The disassembled board from the SOS, the Secretary of State is authorized to investigate complaints related to foreign exchange student programs registered with the SOS. We required the state to pay for Office of Administration hearings, the OAH Fair Campaign Practice hearings related to local candidates out of the public subsidy appropriation, and currently these costs are paid for by counties. We exempted now the one compromise with the complaints on the electronic licensing system. We were able to exempt commerce licensees from the EL licensing surcharge with the OET will and the money for doing that will come, that they've already paid, will come from commerce to do that. That was, you know, again, part of that same argument with the double charging that was able to be worked out with the other agencies. We prohibit the transfer of the EQB duty to administration to the State Pollution Control Agency. This is a conflict with the governor's recommendation, but a strong support of many members of the EQB and former members. You know, the principle of the EQB was it was supposed to not be in any agency. It was supposed to deal with all of the agencies that have to deal with environmental practices. Very strong support for doing this came to me from a former chair of the EQB under Governor Carlson, I believe, former Republican Senator Bob Dunn, who fully understands, possibly maybe the senator responsible for setting it up initially. We renamed the state government. I don't know what happens in the Republican caucus and the Democratic caucus and the DFL caucus. We get this great enthusiasm for cutting state government. So we renamed the State Government Finance Division the Enterprise Services and Government Efficiency Division. We eliminated the need for state officials to sign their phone bill if the bill is less than $5. We require finance and MMB to study co-location of the minority councils in the metro area, not just the Midby one.
We require the State Board of Investment to provide an executive summary in the annual report and to publish annual and quarterly reports online. The traditional line in this bill is to make the Aurora Avenue Capitol Senate parking space available to the public. We require the Met Council and the Environmental Quality Board. There's a huge, a large amount of language in the bill that came from the governor dealing with the Environmental Quality Board issues around the Mississippi River. We only put one of them in, making them look at the at a property adjacent to the Mississippi critical area in Minneapolis as part of the regional open space system. We made the 1,040-hour voluntary permanent leave of absence provision permanent. Currently, that provision sunsetted in 2009.
Can I interrupt? I know there's lots of things in the bill. I wonder, instead of listing every one of them like that, we kind of went through the financial part of it. That's the policy.
Okay.
If it's okay with the members of the committee, we will probably let people read that. If there's some interest in some things that are in the bill, I will surely have discussion on it.
Okay.
Representative Scalzi, you have a question on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tan, and you went over this kind of fast, and you were talking about the Office of Information Technology, Office of Enterprise Technology, sorry, and you mentioned the word outsourcing. Could you expand a little bit on that, what you said and what you meant?
Representative Tan.
You did use the word outsourcing, so I wonder what you mean by that.
I don't think that word occurs in the bill. It's representative.
You want to come up, set up, and see if you can answer, Mr. Shepard? Just identify yourself with the tape.
I went too fast to see.
Mr. Shepard, did you understand the question?
Mr. Chair and members, Mark Shepard from House Research. There is a study toward the end of the bill that relates, let me just see if I can find it.
Page 72, Mr. Chair.
It's section 96.
Okay, thank you. And that relates to information technology, but that is relating to transferring state employees from other agencies to the Office of Enterprise Technology. That section is not an outsourcing provision.
I've misspoke when I said that. It's part of the whole study of how we're going to arrange Office of Enterprise Technology.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Khan, on page 34, section 39, there's a misappropriation of money section here, and it talks about how no official or head of any State Department can spend money for anything that it was at when it was allocated for a different purpose. For example, the Department of Corrections this past year, might have been the year before, was allocated $1 million by the legislature to put to incarcerate folks in boot camps. And they didn't fill up the boot camp. Instead, they spent the money on inmates in regular prison. Would that be a misappropriation of funds under this provision? And could the Commissioner of Corrections be prosecuted and guilty of a gross misdemeanor?
Representative Khan.
This is House File. This is a bill that was included in House File 7. By from Representative Winkler. I can't answer that.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did hear this bill, and if it's House File 7, we did hear House File 7 and the Public Safety Finance Committee.
It just, as I'm reading it here, right the second that just popped into my mind, because I was actually quite upset that the Department of Corrections actually didn't fill up the boot camp when they were directed by the legislature to do that. And so I think maybe between now and the floor I will be asking some other questions about whether that would apply, because I don't know, Mr. Chair and members, if we want to find the Commissioner of Corrections guilty of a gross misdemeanor, but that might be kind of fun, actually.
Well, Representative Khan, There is a penalty in here, a criminal penalty of a gross misdemeanor. I've seen lots of things in state government finance, but never a penalty of a gross misdemeanor, I don't think. I think you probably at least want to have some consideration for this one as it proceeds here.
It did go to Representative
Hillstrom?
Mr. Chair, it did pass out of my committee, again, just now seeing it in this setting, that was something that I didn't think of when it was before my committee, Mr. Chair. So I will have further conversations with Representative Winkler, just to make certain. I would bet that all members would like to know if a department spends money in the general area, but not what we specifically allocate it for, if we're going to be finding those folks guilty of a gross misdemeanor.
Okay.
Knowing means how, you know, how restrictive was that? But I think the governor has and clearly a department has a certain ability to shift money around within the area. So I think it really depends on exactly what the wording in the appropriation was and how it was considered.
Okay.
Any other questions on the bill itself? We have some amendments before us. Representative McNamara, I think your amendment is, do you want to move it?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the 8-17-81-832.
Okay, that's amendments before us. Representative McNamara, members, you might want to turn to page 67.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, if you go to page 67, you'll notice section 83 is a private sale of surplus land. As Representative Kahn mentioned in her brief testimony about what's in the bill, I believe Representative Kahn, it was in the 2006 state government bill, if I'm not mistaken, required the state to sell $6.4 million worth of land. At that time it said by, if I'm not mistaken, now it's in law is July 1st of 2009, and Representative Kahn is proposing to extend that out. Two parcels are really making up the bulk of the land sale, 80 acres adjoining the city of Hastings, sited on three sides by residential development. It's a wildlife management area currently, and the DNR is proposing to sell that land. It's got an estimated value very similar per acre to the area that Representative Kahn has suggested and put in her bill to give to the city of Champlin for free. The area she's describing here is 50 acres in the city of Champlin. Again, it's a wildlife management area, and I believe that we should have the DNR, as in the 2006 state government bill, sell that land. And there is about somewhere in an estimate around $2.4 million value to this land. Now, folks, you should know that Schmidt family gave this land to the state of Minnesota to keep it for wildlife use. And I think it would be appropriate in DNR as a policy that they would find another parcel that could be named after the Schmidt family that would serve a similar purpose. This land is of limited wildlife value, similar to Hastings when it's urbanized on three sides. It would be more appropriate to be taken out of the program, the money moved, and to use somewhere else. And so, Mr. Chair, that's the bill, and if anybody has any questions, or Representative Kahn may want to.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I would oppose that amendment. First of all, if you notice, and, you know, of course I don't quite know all the history of it, there was already in previous state law, in a previous land bill, this parcel was already in the place, and I don't know if this is true for Hastings too, was in the way that it had already been discussed that it could be conveyed to the governmental subdivision. You'll notice there was a May instead of you understand that there was a May instead of a month. And it just said for less than the value of the land is determined by the commissioner. It was supposed that there would be some negotiation between the commissioner and the agency. Now, as I understand it, and I've actually talked to Mr. Meyer of the department and said, well, maybe there is some compromise so this could be put up for land. This particular piece of land is totally surrounded on all sides by developed by development. It was the Schmidt estate which was given to the community to be open for wildlife. It is zoned for wildlife management land. I do not believe that they will be able to sell it to the assessed value, particularly in this possible market. So the language that I asked, which we haven't gotten from the department, which I will certainly consider as it comes, is to put this, I mean, one of the things is that it might be sold off. I can't believe that anybody is going to buy undeveloped land because it's zoned, the city has already zoned it for wildlife management purposes. So I can't believe that it will sell for what the assessed price is. So, but what a possibility is, and talking, is that the adjacent owners might want to expand their, might want to just expand their backyards or their front yards or however that works. So, what I suggest happen is that the land go up for sale, and that the land be, and that, you know, if that works, if there's an offer and that works, then, you know, then we consider it. But I just don't believe, I don't care, you know, DNR thinks they're going to make up the $2 million by selling it, but I can't find you a real estate agent that says that will work, no matter what the assessed value is. And so this was brought to me right by Representative Keith, and I would suggest that we leave it in the bill and that we try and work out and see if some, when the DNR starts their land sale, DNR does their land sale starting in May 27th, if some of this gold that would, that might be the, you might fill some of that hole that they're trying to fill, but
we do have somebody from the Department of Natural Resources that'd like to at least give a statement on it. Usually don't take testimony, but welcome, and if you want to kind of address some of the concerns.
Mr. Chair,
raised.
Members, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I will be as brief as I possibly can here. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. I'm just going to try to get a quick picture up on the teleprompter here for you to see. The land was actually zoned residential up until just about a month or so ago. The city has changed the zoning of it, and I'm not sure if that's in an attempt to protect it or not, but you can see here, and I apologize for the quality, the two purple squares are the parcels we're talking about right now that are wildlife management areas as designation, but you can see they are fully encroached upon both sides. The smaller 10-acre parcel is what we're looking to sell this May. That's fully encroached around all sides and would be developable in
would
the middle there.
Would you point that out to us?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, that's this piece right here.
All right.
That's about 10 acres, closer to 7. The top one's 39. What put this in this position is the land sales requirements that were passed the first in 2005, extended in 2007. To come due, the bill for that spending is now coming due June 30th, 2009. At both of those points in time, the department did testify to the legislature that if it was required to sell land, we would be looking to sell state forest land, state park land, and wildlife management areas because those are the only types of land that we have to sell. Building sites as well, but we really don't have any building sites that could generate the type of revenue we need right now. To date, the balance is about $4.4 million. That is needed to be sold before June 30th. Otherwise, we've received directions from the Department of Finance that we will be unallotted within the department 4.4 or the balance of those dollars yet this biennium, which would add to a current right now, we've unallotted $5.2 million. That would be an additional 4.4 this biennium or in 2009, which would have some severe impact to the department and the activities we do.
Ms. Myers, let me interrupt a little bit. If I recall right the history of this, was that the requirement was within the Department of Administration in the 2005 bill to do the, I don't know how much it was, I want to say maybe 6, was it 6.4 then or 10? 6.4. And the Department of Administration was not able to sell. And then I thought there came a suggestion or a, from the Department of Natural Resources a couple years later when they extended it and said you don't have to make the cuts within the Department of Administration or throughout state government, that the Department of Natural Resources, well, we'll sell the land. And then within the 2 years of DNR's requirement of our suggestion that they would be willing to sell the land, that didn't happen either. And then I think we extended this a couple of years. Am I kind of right on the history of this particular provision?
Mr. Chair, just real briefly, the first round of land sales was required. It was about $7 million, and at that point in time, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension building down on University Avenue was sold. Those dollars went to the general fund. There were some other buildings that were rather large, surplus-type land buildings that were sold to meet those requirements. It worked so well, the legislature decided to do it again the following biennium and booked another $6.4 million. And it does say Department of Administration, and actually it's the language that I don't have it with me, I have it up in my bag, refers to the state shall sell. Department of Administration has a parcel up by Anoka County, the Anoka Regional Treatment Center. They're unable to get any closings on that. They can't get an offer on that. That parcel and the DNR parcels remain to be what's on the books at this point in time. So to date, the DNR has sold $1.5 million worth of land. The Department of Administration has sold $1.7 million, Ag $150,000, Corrections $1 million, Employment Economic Development $20,000, Human Services, one of those large buildings, was $5.4 million, DNR was $1.4 million, and then the Perpich Center was sold for $353,000 that went to the general fund. It's not that we don't understand the values of these lands here. We're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Given direction from the legislature to sell land to balance the spending in the past two bienniums is where we're at right now. Our land sales, the signs will go around, letters will go around to all the adjacent property owners this week, letting them know we are selling this land. It will be posted for sale, and our auction is May 27th on this one of the parcels is in Representative McNamara's area. That the City of Hastings is working with us. They want to sell that, get it developed.
Representative McNamara, the department in Hastings, is that going to be purchased by the City of Hastings?
Mr. Chair, the property actually is in the Ravana Township. It's not actually in the city limits. It's surrounded on three sides by the city. It's currently in the township, and I think what would happen, this land is nowhere near as close to development as the land Representative Kahn wants to take away. This land's not even in the city limits.
Well, Representative McMahon, my question is the proposal for the city or the township or a public entity to buy that land, or is that being marketed to you to a private developer?
Mr. Chair, I believe it would be sold either at public auction or sealed bids. The DNR
to a private developer,
to whoever would want to buy it. I think they're open to whoever.
Mr. Myers,
that is correct. It'll be sold at public auction to the highest bidder.
Did you have other things? I cut you off on your little bit.
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay, we have several questions on this. Representative Swales, Westrom, Hoppe, Nelson, Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and perhaps I'm naive, and perhaps I don't have the institutional history behind me that others in this body have, but my understanding is that in 1860 or 1861, the 6th and 36th section of every township was to be dedicated for education in Minnesota, and I'm going to be that bad penny that keeps turning up, but
we like that.
Okay, yeah. All right. But I'm very disappointed to hear that Section 36 and each of these provisions is up for sale, and that the money is going to fund the budget of the DNR. I love the DNR, trust me. But when we say it's going to the general fund or to balance the budget, and it's not being used for the purposes that these sections were dedicated, I guess I am naive. But perhaps somebody can help me understand precisely what those sections are for.
Let me try to answer that. I think they probably, if they were Section 36 or 16, they probably were sold earlier on and deposited in the fund already. I don't know as if these are, Mr. Myers?
Mr. Chair, they are not school trust lands, and our land sales bill does contain a number of school trust parcels we are looking to sell to benefit the trust. So.
Okay. Then, did you get your question answered? Good?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it seems to me fundamentally we've just got a difference going on here. One being given land, which I'm not sure how you're booking that $1 or $2 million of dollars that we would receive by selling it. Why would you be giving it to one community and not to another? And furthermore, why would we be giving away state lands? I mean, that's part of the idea of balancing a budget, is selling off assets, just like you'd do if you had money troubles in your own family or business. You'd sell off assets. The state has to do the same thing right now, or has been engaged in that for a while. But why are we giving it away to a city of Champlin? And I'll ask the second part of the question. Don't you smell a little mischievousness going on here if they just changed the zoning a month ago by the city? Why would we reward that kind of behavior?
Well, Mr. Chairman, let's go back to what we're doing. We're going to a requirement to the Department of Administration to sell off surplus state land. This, you have a particular piece of state land that happens to be in a pretty small, in a really small city of, I think, 2,200 inhabitants or something like that. And the price, the assessed price, is assessed by the houses around it. So we're looking at an assessed value of this of $2.5 million. Now that's fine, unless they can't sell it for that, which is highly likely. Now this was much, I'd never put, and Representative Dietrich never put this language in the bill. This language, there was already discussion with dealing with the land that the, that the commissioner may sell the land for less than the value. This is existing state law. That was already decided. The commissioner decided, though, that he wasn't, so someone had already, before I ever came into it, someone had already decided that it was, that was okay, to do. Now, the question is, if you go through the sale and nobody buys this, because this is not, because they don't believe that they can develop the land either because of the economy right now or because of the change of zoning, and I think they probably changed the zoning when they saw the threat, threat to the idea of keeping this as wildlife management land. But, so the question is, at the end of the sale, it's not sold, it's still in the same place, except the city is left hanging, not knowing what they can do with it. So my suggestion, but we don't have the language quite yet to do it, and I think if this stays in it, that we have discussion between the commissioner and the city about what a reasonable price would be. We allow the part that they're going to post for sale, we allow that to be posted for sale. Is it, how much is that of the total amount that's in sample?
I think it's
there's two parcels there. One is, I think it's 7 acres, and the other one's 39 acres. That long one was about 7 acres.
Yes.
The other one was about 39.
And this one that's being posted is about?
They're both scheduled to be sold this year, Mr. Chair, members. The first one would be the smaller one would be what we're selling this spring.
So I think the idea of posting it and selling it, I understand it might be perfectly fine to just sell it to the adjacent, to the adjacent owners and see what happens. And, but it's too complicated language to fix up today in this committee in this bill. So
Mr.
my
Myers.
Suggestion is that we vote down the McNamara amendment, and we hope that people come with us and bring us something that we can work
Mr.
with.
Mr. Chair, yes. The language that Representative Conn is talking about was language that we put in the land sales bill last session, allowing us to have talks with the cities and the county, and giving us the opportunity, if we so desire, to transfer this at no cost. What the language does, it forces us to give it to them for free here. And I just need to make sure, the month when it's the change in zoning, I'm not sure if it was a month, but it has happened recently. It was not always classified as open space. It was residential for quite some time.
No. So, Mr. Myers, for clarification purposes, when the session laws of 2007 which is current law, which says the commissioner may sell the land to a governmental subdivision of the state for less than the value of the land. That language was put into law at the request of the department?
Mr. Chair, it was a provisionary land sales bill allowing us flexibility to figure out what to do.
No, that's not the question I asked. If it was flexibility, was it put in at the request of the department?
Mr. Chair, members, it wasn't a department's land sale bill from last year.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Representative West.
Well, follow-up, Mr. Chair. Representative Conn, and maybe I just have a fundamental difference of how I understand what the bill is. You don't sound like you think you're giving it to the city. That's what the bill seems to be doing. Mr. Meyer, I'm a little perplexed with this change of zoning. Is there just been an epiphany in that area of what they want to do with the zoning? Or it seems to me the new zoning is going to restrict your ability to find buyers if they can force them to keep it just the way it is and not develop it. Is that...
Mr. Myers?
What's going on there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, the change in zoning was perplexing to us as well. Our appraisal is appraised on the highest and best use of the property. I can certainly come back and get you some more specific details on when that occurred, but our position is that we would sell this land for its highest and best use, and so that would be residential development at this point in time.
And just to follow up, and then I'm done, Mr. Chair, it seems to me the language we ought to be looking at, if the city is pulling this kind of chicanery trick, we probably should have some language tied in there, Mr. Myers, that says the buyer may be able to use this for the purposes that it was zoned for within the last two years, because it seems to me we shouldn't be giving it away just because somebody wants to now change the zoning, which, by the way, they're also entitled in 3 months, if their buddies buy it, to go back and change the zoning again to whatever they want. And so
it
seems like we need some language that allows it to be used for what it has been zoned for in order to get the money out of it. But I don't think we should be... Either way, I don't think we should be giving it to him, Representative Conn.
Well,
I thought Representative Conn was kind of going down a suggestion of a compromise. So, and Mr. Myers, we're like the number one on line 67.31 of the bill is the 39 acres. You said that the number two, the 6.67 acres, was on the paperwork for the sale in early spring. But you did not mention the 39 acres. Yeah, when is that scheduled to be sold?
Mr. Chair, members, our fall sale, I don't have the exact date of our fall sale, sometime in September, I believe. We haven't set the official date yet, but...
So that 39 acres, no way then would help solve the 6.64 that you have an obligation to sell for in 2009 fiscal year. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, it would help us if that provision that's in this bill extended that to 2011. Those dollars then would be submitted to that
extension down.
I think Representative Kahn's bill does extend that, and there's an anticipation in her bill that the DNR would be short of the $6.64 million of about $2 million she's booking in the 2010 and 11 biennium even. So it seems to me that there's a logical type of solution that can be that was being suggested, at least by Representative Kahn, in that the 6.67 acres that paperwork has been put into place, the sale will take place sometime, you said, in May. I thought they were saying that that would probably should go forward to see what would happen. And the 39 acres, that seems to be the contentious part, would not be sold until the later on in the fall and into the next biennium. And we would know then at least to have some kind of consideration of what the conflict could be, if the conflict could be resolved.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
Again, it's not my area, and I came into this whole discussion late, and I don't think this ever would have come up if it hadn't been suggested that this could go for less than the consideration, for less than the highest and best use value, you know, from last year's bill, which neither Representative Dietrich nor I had anything to do with. But I think the question is that there might be a compromise between nothing and $2.25 million for the city. And
Representative Hoppe, I have you on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think that's what we're looking for.
I will be brief. Mr. Meyer, generally speaking, who pays for WMAs?
Mr.
Chair, members, they're purchased through many different ways. What we're looking through disposition to meet the general fund requirements, we've acquired through custodial control or other methods, and there's no longer any restrictions attached to those. None of these acquisitions are from bonding or anything else like that. And just, Mr. Chair, to your point on the position from last year to this year, things have changed drastically with the land sales abilities. We thought that there would be substantial, if not complete, booking of sales to meet this requirement. We have received further direction from the Department of Finance since the end of last session and this session on who will be held responsible and who needs to sell land. So that's why our position has changed on this somewhat. We were trying to work with the city and trying to accommodate their needs and our needs, because this is a unit that can no longer be used for its intended purposes, which is for hunting and outdoor recreation of those types of things for a wildlife management area as it is designated. So that's what started our conversations last session. But now things, as we all know, have changed, and we are in the position of trying to, as I said, complete some land sales to pay for last two bienniums worth of spending on these dollars.
So, Mr. Chairman, correct a statement. Hunting is allowed on this place. Bow hunting is allowed with notice to the city.
Let me also clarify, people. Mr. Myers, you said that if this doesn't go forward, that the DNR would be unallocated the funds under 6.66.27 or 29, all executive agencies would be spread across all executive agencies for the shortfall, so not just yours.
Mr. Chair, I will be providing some written correspondence to the committee from the Department of Finance that clarifies that situation.
But that must be an agreement between the Department of Finance and the DNR, not for state law.
Maybe that's one of those misappropriation of funds.
Does that mean that...
The answer is pretty simple, actually. They're looking at state ownership among all agencies. The DNR owns 5.5 million. I think the rest of the acres that are out there owned by state agencies are 65,000. So if you do the math,
but the other agencies,
30,000 square feet owned by other agencies, the DNR owns 5.5 million acres. So that's where they're getting their math from, and that's why we're trying to meet this need.
Mr. Myers, I understand you're trying to meet the need. I just want to correct your statement that if the decision is to be made out of the Department of Natural Resources, that's not the law or the legislature that's saying that. That's an administrative decision, and not the... Okay, I have Representative Hoppe. Were you finished?
I'll pass with the rest.
Representative Nelson and Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the picture's taken off the wall. I guess I was just trying to get my...
Do you want to pass?
Yeah, I'd like to see, because I got a couple questions. I'm trying to get my head around where exactly that's at.
You can do it.
There's a road on the bottom. I can describe it. There's a road on the bottom of the map.
Can we get the map up on the screen again?
I assured him that we didn't need it anymore. My fault.
Mr. Chairman, bring down Marty Vedas, who can tell you exactly where this is located in that.
Okay.
As I have said, there's a road here on the bottom of the map where he pointed the one here, and there's a big blob on the left hand of the map. I would like to describe what that is there, what that road is on the bottom, and where your hand is there, what that area there is.
Mr. Chair, I'm Marty Vedas. I'm the director of DNR Lands and Minerals Division, and this blob here is a small, shallow lake called Goose Lake.
Okay.
And this is a residential development in this area. This is a road of city of Champlin, and I don't recall the number of this highway, but this is
Okay.
You're familiar with
it. And I'm familiar with it. That's the source of my district, yeah, so I know the area.
And so then this is also residential development along with that. And for this parcel, the 6.7-acre parcel, is surrounded by residential development on all sides.
That was my question. The only other concern I have is when they're talking about zoning changes, as has been pointed out, that can be changed later, and even if there were covenants put on the property and did not be changed. I know in Brooklyn Center there's a site that was sold to, or given to the, donated to the University of Minnesota, Earl Brown Farm, that the University of Minnesota broke that covenant because it was supposed to be kept as farming, and that covenant was broken, and now it's all homes and development there. So that stuff can be changed at a later date.
Representative Holberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I won't belabor this point, but it also seems wrong that if it was zoned for residential for years and just recently it got zoned into a lower use, if that's an attempt by government officials to devalue the property so they can get it cheaper, that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense either. So I don't know if, you know, what the solution is. We're certainly not going to solve it tonight.
Representative Holberg, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. And we are kind of doing policy, but it is fiscal policy as well, I guess.
Well, so, Mr. Chair, if they don't get the money that's booked for this and instead only get the $37,000 or whatever, then is it an 09 hole? Is it, I mean, have we created another budget target resolution?
We're going to get cookies one way or another.
I know. But,
okay, we have Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still struggling to understand one feature of this that affects my view of it, which is with either under the old language or under the new MUX language, let's take the new language, do they still have the option of selling this to private parties and not a couple? So just that they've now been to the new language. Now, under the old language, they have the option of a private party? Okay. So the new language is limiting them to selling it to government. And then the local government has devalued it by changing its zoning status. So somebody's taking it. So I got a yes, and then I got a no. So what's the real story here? Who are they going to sell it to?
Chair,
thank you.
Members, little history. Commissioner Miriam, former commissioner of DNR, puzzled over this parcel on what to do with it. And there was an interest in trying to work with the local unit of government so that they could acquire this land and it could remain as green space for the community. And I must tell you that part of the discussion was looking at the zoning decisions that the city made by developing housing units all the way around this parcel, which really prevented it from being used for the purpose that DNR owned and managed it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a decision that was made to request authority to do a direct sale to the city of Champlin. Local leader of the government has stated here in the statute, and to work with the city of Champlin to try to come up with a price that both TNR and the city could live with. And so that was the interest and the intent, and the ability to put this up for auction so anyone could buy it has always existed. This was an attempt to try to work with the city for that purpose.
Okay. Representative Bonifalo.
So, to clarify, so even under the new language, you could still put this up for auction to private parties?
Mr. Chair, the answer is yes.
Okay.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you.
So we should try to
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vadas, if I can clarify, when you refer to the new language, you're referring to 2007 language that says you may sell it to a local government. Representative Kahn's language would require you to give it to the city for free.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I read it the same way. Yes, I believe that's correct.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I appreciated your comments earlier, Mr. Chair, that you want to see it worked on and a possible compromise. The current language, if I understand right, and Commissioner or Representative Kahn or Mr. Vadas, you can clarify the language if we accept my amendment and delete Section 83. You could work with a local unit of government, give it to them. You could have an auction on May for part of it and an auction in September for the other part, or have an auction like you're going to have in Hastings and do it all at one time. Under the bill, you will have to give it to the city for free. It doesn't matter if it's worth $2.4 million. Maybe you'll sell it for more, maybe you'll sell it for less, but you won't be selling it for anything under the bill the way Representative Kahn has it. Am I right?
Mr. Chairman, my suggestion was, and I made this earlier in the day in no language, it was that we work on the language so that you can look at the sale and negotiate with the city for the same time. And then I feel very uncomfortable, you know, as I said, this is something that's very important to Representative Dietrich.
What?
I mean, and,
well, if we took it out, Representative McNamara, I think
we took it out, you can't do anything.
It would be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I respect Representative Kahn where you're coming from, but it's not fair. I got 80 acres, you're going to sell it for $3 million, you're going to give this to the city. A Champlin, absolutely. Not only that, you're telling us to quit paying the pilt on it.
How about
Mr. Chair, I'll ask for a roll call.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
Representative McNamara, was there any proceedings, thing done with the land that you're interested in? Was that done in the DNR land sales bill or something? This is something that was already under consideration. This was something until DNR changed their mind and said we're not going to allow anything less than the, less than the appraised value for the highest and best use. So I think you need to step back a step, and you need to get that. If you want the same thing to happen to that land in Hastings, you need to get the language describing that into. Go talk to the people working on the land sales bill and get that into current law, and then we can look and see what the amount of the assessed value of that is, what the city is willing to pay, and what and what the area is. This was great. You know, I didn't. This language exists in statute. This concept of selling it for less. So,
if you there is a little bit of a distinction, obviously, between 67.18, which has a may in it, for the C, and then B, which says a must, go back to, down to C. So there's a little bit of conflict on the may and the must, and I think we need to have some work done on this, obviously, and it's a good discussion. Representative McNamara, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the flexibility. I really appreciate it. If we eliminate the section, Representative Kahn, we can do all the different things we want to do. Give it to the city, sell it for an auction, go back and talk. If we accept your language, we can do nothing but give it to the city. That's absolutely, Representative Kahn, Commissioner or Director Vadas, does not, if this bill passes today with Section 83 in it, it says the commissioner must sell the land to the government subdivision of the state for no consideration. And your last paragraph takes away the pills of $18,750 a year. I'm assuming that's what that is. Not only are you giving them the land, you're going to take away the payment in lieu on it.
That's good for the department.
Yeah.
That's good for the department. That's giving something to the department.
Yeah.
The department doesn't have to make that payment.
Okay, we're going to try our best to bring this to a somewhat of a representative.
If you take the section out, it's not amenable to amendment. It's not amenable to be added in conference committee. It's not amenable to an amendment on the floor. You leave the section in, you know, all of those things can happen.
Okay.
So, I would have no vote on the McNamara.
We have a Representative Bunn on the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I had asked a question earlier, and the testifier gave me an answer, and then Mr. McNamara completely said what I heard in my answer was the opposite of what he believed to be the case. So I'm still confused, okay? My question had been, and when I referred to new language, I meant the language in this bill right here on this page. My question has been, does this language allow you to have an option to sell it to private parties still? Your answer has been yes, but then I'm hearing no. My reading is no, but I would like to, that's the pivotal issue for me. So if what Mr. Representative McNamara is saying is true, if this limits it only to a sale to the city, only, I need to know that.
Mr. Vedas?
Perhaps I did confuse the issue earlier. We're dealing with a couple of different sets of laws. And in the law that set up the requirement to sell $6.44 million of land to balance the state budget, that also included a notwithstanding provision that said that all of the normal laws that we have to follow in selling land, like land on Lakeshore, or the requirement to offer land for sale to a local unit of government, those were all waived. The legislation essentially said, go find some land, go sell it, and you don't have to come back here for any more approvals in order to do that. So if this land is sold under that $6.44 million provision, it can be sold to anybody, and we waive all the requirements for legislative approval for that sale. If the land is sold to go into the land acquisition account, which is what Commissioner Miriam had in mind here, so that more land could be purchased, then offering it to a local unit of government is a requirement that we have to have.
Okay. There's a little bit of confusion in this. Representative Bunn, I understand the difficult, probably the difficult confusion is that when we try to balance the budget on the gimmick, they say, well, just sell some land, and I've seen that 10-second soundbite before. If we sell all the land, we'll solve $6 billion worth of problems in our budget. This is what happens when we do that. Okay, Representative McNamara.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to do two things. First, I'd like to withdraw my amendment and withdraw the roll call.
Okay.
And I'd like to offer an oral amendment.
Okay, we have that before us.
Mr. Chair, on page 67, line 22, in Representative Kahn's bill, I would cross out the word must and reinsert the word may.
Okay. Representative Kahn, your reaction to that?
So it says may.
He's restoring the may.
But the problem was, that's what existed for a year, 2 years, whatever, a year. That existed for 2 years and it didn't work. So,
Representative Holbrook, to that point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, this is a very complex matter, and I think this satisfies your point that if we have some language in here, we can keep working on it. But it's kind of a compromise for Representative McNamara to drop his amendment, okay, to delete the whole section. Let's keep talking.
Okay. Representative Kahn.
Let me suggest something which I think might be a little bit...
Would you like to make a suggestion?
Okay. That would be to leave the must, but to put in for less, but put in the stricken language, less than the value of the land as determined by the commissioner, or for no consideration. So they're both, it's both out there before it. So they certainly can sell it. It certainly says that they can sell part of it, or it's also available.
Representative,
it's also available to be given.
Are you able to understand that?
Well, I would keep the month. The problem is the May. We've had the May and it didn't work.
Well, just a minute. Let's see what Representative Representative McNamara.
You know, Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Tom, for your efforts, but I'm going to stick to my oral amendment to strike the must and insert May.
Okay,
Are you amending the oral amendment?
Yes.
Well, why don't we, instead of doing that, why don't we deal with the oral amendment, and then if there's another type of amendment, that'd be better to deal with.
I would urge
Representative Westrom, well, why don't I try to complete this?
Mr. Chair, and I understand that. Representative Kahn, what you're saying is by leaving the must, then if I understand this correctly, the must says it has to go to the city, the local unit of government, for no consideration.
No.
Because
I'm putting back the language that also allows it, that also allows the possibility of less than the value of land.
But is there one specific party that will get to buy it then, or can it go for an auction, or can it do anything else if we do what you're proposing?
I think what she would do is keep the negotiations going.
Yes.
Right.
But who would be the entity that you're negotiating with? Is it one party, or is it...
No, the city is negotiating with the DNR.
Correct. So by doing it what you're saying, you're still just leaving it for one entity. You're not doing what Representative Bunn was talking about, still allowing an auction or other options. Representative McNamara's amendment would allow other options if the city, the DNR, can't get things figured out, as well as, I think, the powerful chairman from the state government finance committee will be involved in massaging these negotiations.
Okay. I'm going to call the question, if I may. We understand this. We could probably be arguing here until midnight, and we don't want to do that over this small division. The amendment that has been withdrawn, roll call has been withdrawn. A new oral amendment, page 67, line 22, get rid of the stricken or insert the stricken language and delete the underlined language.
Okay.
Insert the stricken and delete the underline, changing the must back to a may. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And the motion prevails. Okay?
Are there any other amendments?
I don't have any other amendments.
If I might, very quickly, I had the pleasure of serving on Representative Kahn's committee for the first time this year. I learned a lot. I think she had very difficult targets to work with when you think about the role of Department of Finance and revenue, and they're kind of the backbones of the state system, bringing in the money, keeping things working, admin. I'm sure that in the end result, the bill will look far different. I do have to bring one comment from our mutual friend, former Representative Krenke. As hard of a day as April 15th is for him every year, was actually made worse this year by the fact that Chair Kahn is deleting his language that identifies a fee as a tax, so it was a double hit on tax day. So I'm sure we'll have discussion about that on the House floor, but it was a pleasure serving on your committee, and like you said, this bill will likely not be defended before the state Supreme Court in its current form, so I think it has a little work to do before we have the governor sign it.
There's all kinds of work that needs to be done in the next few days, but no matter who's in charge, that's always the case, isn't it? So, any other pertinent discussion? if not, then the chair will renew the motion. that, I'm talking about that chair over there. Carl will renew the motion that Senate File 2082, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried. The members, that concludes the meeting tonight. Wednesday, after session, we'll be doing House File 1169, the Omnibus Economic Development Bill, and the, we will not be doing the Hutney Bill. Because I don't think we get that till Thursday, because it has to go through our rules.
And Mr. Chair, yeah. On Wednesday, closed session is like in the morning, and then you have a post there at 11.
Just a minute.
Are you anticipating a long floor day on Wednesday with omnibus bills and that the Ways and Means will be in the evening, or?
Yes. That's been anticipated.
Because I think you're posted like at noon right now with session at 11 or
and,
something.
And if there are some changes in that schedule, I'll let you know and let people know as well. We have a couple of days. Everyone has to be, as you know, very fluid at this time. Okay? Yes. Right, that, President. Meeting is adjourned.